Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yeah, I'm here. Just had to put the phone ringer away. Yeesh. It's a minute and a half past the hour. It's Friday on the front porch, everybody. We have had an absolute run of magnificent Friday afternoons. It seems like the pretty ones come when I on the those pretty Fridays come along on the days when, well, I got to figure out a way to build an outdoor studio. That's all there is to it. Sit there basking in the sun while there's still sun to bask in. Because, you know, here in the hills and hollers of what's left of almost, well, wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia, we cherish these late August afternoons. It won't be long before we will begin to notice most affirmatively the fading of the light as we slide toward autumn. And then downhill to the dead and still of winter. That's how it goes. But this is a beautiful one. And so it's an awesome, wonderful opportunity to mosey on up to the front porch here. Have a seat. Kick your feet up on the rail. Uncap a bottle of something ice cold from out of that zinc galvanized wash tub over there. Non-expert players of the washboard are asked to please refrain from any attempt to provide a percussion or rhythm section accompaniment for the conversation. Now, there's a jug of sweet iced tea over there, too. Got some lemon sliced up. Help yourself. Help yourself. Because it being is a beautiful evening, we've got tons to cuss and discuss about. And, you know, with it being Friday on the front porch, we can talk about most anything. You know how that goes. And I try to find some stuff that maybe hasn't made it into the consciousness over the course of the week to discuss as we go along. And I've got a bunch of that this evening. Food stuff. Religion stuff, kind of like a mini prayer meeting. We'll call it revival. And you have... That's the only time Baptists ever go to church on a Friday is if that Friday is either Christmas or they're having a revival. Let's see. Just a heartrending tale. We'll go to audio for this. A heartrending tale of what for-profit health care means in America. That's a possibility. Don't look now, but the oil plume ain't gone. There's that. Over-the-air terrestrial buggy whip radio is having a hissy. I don't know if you caught any of this, but this is funny. They're so pathetic. They really are. They're like buggy whip manufacturers the carrying on about Henry Ford and his newfangled horseless carriage. And then there's Israel. There's always Israel. And that bloodlust that makes them want to bomb the snot out of Iranian people, you know, for being Iranian people. Iranian people whose government wants to have nuclear power so as not to waste all of their mineral resources there at home and put it on the open market instead. But you know, Israel needs to bomb them. And we're told that, you know, the White House has talked them out of bombing Iran for maybe another year or so, but, well, we'll get to that. There's a bunch of other stuff. And look at that. One of those ahead-of-the-curve moments that you only get to participate in if you're on the horn. An interesting post over at Think Progress today. I think this is something that came up during the conversation that I had a week or so ago with Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash and Maya Shenware from the executive director of truthout.org. And there's a whale of a story I found over at Truthout. It'll make its way into the conversation tonight. That's part of the that's the Friday revival part of the program. But one of the, during that conversation, you may recall that I sort of spilled the beans and said I was getting really sick of seeing BP ads at Think Progress. And that I, of course, click the ads so that it will cost BP more money, because BP's stupid PR and advertising campaigns have no, they have no effect on me. Because I know that it's BP, they're filthy global corporatists, and of course, being such, they're going to lie. Going back to that little article I mentioned earlier, the plume ain't gone. Yeah, still there. Might be there for weeks, might be there for months, might be there for years. BP, by the way, is asking people to sign waivers of liability if they want to participate in the $20 billion escrow fund that they haven't funded. But the Think Progress story is rather interesting because it raises a couple of questions along as well as answering them. A little profile and courage, perhaps, this evening. How not to let right-wing freaks run you out of your job. That would be Kevin Jennings. And that filthy pig Beck and the rest of the filthy pigs of the right-wing media have attacked Kevin Jennings relentlessly. For what? Oh, for being gay. But Kevin Jennings won't back down. Kind of makes you proud. And then this little moment, got a headline here. Gore calls for major protests on climate change in action. I think we got to spend some time with that, hopefully. Let's see, we've got a raving misogynist at the United States Chamber of Commerce, no surprise. And congratulations to Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. Congratulations to Matt. He has posted his first ever post with, woohoo, 60 comments already at Crooks and Liars, Ground Zero and the Zero Sum Mindset. A nice analysis of the way that wingnuts look at rights-related issues. So I hardly know where to start. But I think I've got an idea. Let's start with the foodie stuff. Is that okay? Before we start with the foodie stuff, I got an email a little bit ago from Maura. Maura is a regular contributor to The Horn and is very much interested in seeing it continue to broadcast because for Maura, as she has said on a number of occasions, The Horn is family to her. All of you. Not just me, not just Agnes, not just Doodle and Ferg and Margie. No. All of you are family to Maura. And so I got a note from Maura earlier today, and she said, I'm concerned about the lack of a substantial donor base for The Horn, as are you. So I had an idea that might help a little and wanted to see what you think. During each broadcast, you might want to announce the exact number of donors and the total raised, and tell folks that you know for a fact that X number of listeners listen to the show. She said, I'm not trying to sound mean-spirited because I'm really not that type of person, but like you, I'm frustrated. And I think that's a good idea. So before the show, I ran over and took a look. I took a look at August's receipts. August contributions. You know the monthly goal is $2,500, which when you compare it to some other websites and some other organizations is downright skinny. Well, we are well over halfway past the end of August. That happened on Sunday. And so as of Sunday, we should have reached $1,250. Well, as of Sunday, we hadn't reached $1,000. But today, which is August the 20th, I did the tally, and we have received for the month of August in contributions $1,135. And this is the important part, and I'm glad that Maura mentioned it. That's $1,135 from 35 people out of an audience that is literally measured in thousands. $1,135 from 35 people out of an audience of thousands. Between now, in order to make the goal, in order for me to be able to send money to Ben Birch to keep White Rose Society going and keep the horn stream going out over White Rose Society, between now and August the 31st, 11 days, we need to raise $1,365. So, I mean, that's the reality of the situation. This month, 35 people have made the horn possible for literally thousands. And that's the update. Now, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and you can use it. It's under the contribute tab if you're able. And, you know, I'm not talking about sending hundreds and hundreds of dollars. If everybody who listened to this program sent $10, I could shut up for 2 months, three maybe. But it doesn't happen. And, well, I hate even having to ask, but, you know, you tell me, what would you rather? You hear the conversations that take place on this program. You tell me what you would rather have. Would you rather have me cut off great conversations with folks like Susan and Preston or Sandra? Would you like it if I said, well, that's enough for you. We've got to stop and sell Preparation H suppositories now. Would you like that? How would you like it if I did what Think Progress had been doing and was running some BP We'll Get This Right ads? Would you like that? It's conceivable, but we could try to do that. We can break the programming up. We can stop it. We can cut off other people's thoughts, other people's conversations. We can do that to run ads. We can do that. Now, going out and chasing down the ads is going to take a whole lot of effort from a whole lot of people. And it's going to take away from the programming. And frankly, at this point in time, we won't even be able, if we sell ads, it will not cover, it probably won't cover the $2,500 a month. And the hat will still get passed. And no one will still get paid. So, you know, I can hear, oh, hell, he's doing that. Click. Let's go over to Pandora. I'm sorry. But it's the truth. 35 people are carrying a program listened to by thousands. And I would rather listen to you and converse with you and email and monitor the chat room and all of that stuff. I'd rather do that. I don't want to be tied down to some the broadcast format clock. I've done that, and it's annoying as hell. It just is. So there you go. 35 people have sent in $1,135 just for the realism factor. Let's see, 1135 divided by 35. That's an average. That's an average contribution of $32.43. Now, let's have some more fun. What if? Oh, wait, I can do that in my head. What if 1,000 people sent $10? That would be $10,000, and I wouldn't have to say a damn word for 4 months. Yeah, 4 times 25. Yeah, come on, I'm an English major. Really? That would be sweet. That would be nice. Because I hate doing this. Really, I despise doing this. So there you go. And look, don't send me emails saying, Bob, don't. If you can't do it, if you can't part with $5 or $10, don't. If $5 or $10 will mean the difference between you eating today, tomorrow, and not eating tomorrow, don't do it. I want to be 100% clear about that. Do not do it. Don't do it. But if this matters, and you can, it's sincerely appreciated. See, the only thing that bothers me about that Think Progress story, well, here, let me just read this, because Faiz Shakir, who does some great work at Think Progress, posted this. Headline, BP pulls ads on Think Progress after Wonk Room reports on its greenwashing campaign. The Wonk Room is a part of Think Progress. Yesterday, Think Progress climate editor Brad Johnson reported on the Wonk Room that the big oil giant BP has been engaged in a massive greenwashing campaign, which includes months of full-page advertisements in national and regional newspapers, radio spots, television commercials, and internet ads on websites, including thinkprogress.org. Pursuant to Johnson's posting, BP has decided to pull its ads from Think Progress. Here's what happened. BP purchased advertising on Think Progress through Common Sense Media. Now, they're an outside ad company. Common Sense Media services, according to Think Progress, a whole network of liberal sites, including Fire Dog Lake, Crooks and Liars, America Blog, Eschaton, and others. Here's a fascinating part. BP has an agreement with Common Sense Media to be notified about blog postings that are critical of its advertising campaign, and BP reserves the right to pull ads if they are offended by the posts.
Oh, I'm offended. Do get me my smelling salts. I think I've got the vapors.
Yeah, we know what kind of vapors BP has. They ain't good for you. Think Progress was aware that BP would in fact be notified of our post. Nevertheless, we felt the story on BP's massive ad campaign was an important issue that deserved attention on our blog. And there you have it. What have I said time and time again? And this is just a little bit about media. Now, these ads have been running for a while on Think Progress, and it's only recently that they ran the story about the BP ad campaign. They've been going for a while. So they've been getting paid for a while. But only in the very recent past did the piece go up about the massive greenwashing campaign. And then BP was suddenly offended. Oh, they were offended. The post about the greenwashing campaign went up at 6:50 p.m. in the Wonk Room on August the 19th, which was yesterday. And the story is not actually about the greenwashing campaign. The headline says Waxman and Stupak demand BP detail scope of greenwashing campaign. And it's about the fact that Representatives Waxman and Bart Stupak are demanding that BP disclose its spending on corporate advertising and marketing relating to the Deepwater Horizon oil spill and relief, recovery, and restoration efforts in the Gulf of Mexico. That's a quote. Brad Johnson goes on to write that BP's radio spots surged to 10,684 last week, with a particular focus on Florida stations. And they also report since mid-July, BP's internet ads have been running on political blogs, including Talking Points Memo, the Common Sense Media network of liberal sites from Fire Dog Lake to America Blog, and a host of right-wing sites, including Eagle Interactive Network with Red State and Salem Web Networks, Townhall.com, and Hot Air. Alabama Attorney General and lunatic generally, Troy King, you remember Troy King, right? Said, BP seems to be working harder to protect its brand than to help the people of the Gulf Coast. And he filed suit against BP because, quote, while BP is spending millions on print ads and airtime, it's not spending what it should on claims. Wow. When did Troy King suddenly get a dose of consumer the consumer protectionism? Shh, he's a lame duck. So in the post over at Think Progress, it says, today our ad provider notified Think Progress that BP has asked that all its ads on the Think Progress sites, Think Progress, Iglesias, and Wonkroom, be pulled through the end of their campaign. I have a question. And it really is a question. This is not rhetorical. I'd like an answer to it. The agreement with Common Sense Media that says that advertisers will be notified, you know, tattled to on any website that writes anything nasty about them. And never is heard a discouraging word, and BP is happy all day. I'm not going to sing anymore tonight. If that agreement exists for BP to be tattled to, does the website owner have any right whatsoever? To accept or refuse advertising? I think this is rather important. If the nature, because remember, think about all the times that ordinary, not particularly shocking ads have been rejected by the right wing predominated mass media. And the question is, Do liberal blogs not get to turn that down then? Do liberal blogs have to just take whatever gets put on their website? And I think the question is actually fairly important because if in fact a website has the right to reject ads, then there should be a separate person who is in charge of going, holy crap, there's a BP ad on our site. No, we reject that. And I know that some ad providers, the Google ads, for instance, you can tell them what you won't take. It doesn't always work, but you can tell them. But it's an important little signpost. Because you see, taking ads does have consequences. It does make you less likely to be critical. This is August the 20th. The BP disaster happened on April the 20th. Yeah, 4 months. And the BP ads are in on Think Progress for how long? Before they indirectly criticized BP and BP pulled the ads? Remember, BP pulled the ads. Think Progress did not reject the ads. Is it all just money? Because if it's all just money and it doesn't matter where it comes from, then everything that I said yesterday about the so-called liberal senators, excuse me, like Daniel Inouye or Amy Klobuchar or Charles Schumer or Sherrod Brown sending money to Joe Manchin, it doesn't matter. Because it's just money, and it carries no moral or ethical connotations. Now, I don't believe that, and I understand the danger of using that word believe. Purchases, market choices, consumer choices do have an ethical and a moral component, no matter how hard corporate the transnationalists, I'm not even going to say corporate America anymore, no matter how hard corporate transnationalists try to convince us that they don't. When Precious Pumpkin is wearing her Hannah Montana t-shirt, she has a moral and ethical connection to some poor human being in some godforsaken sweatshop cranking them out for pennies a day. And I'll go further. I have a moral connection to Elbert Gervonta Wood. Elbert Gervonta Woods, Icky Woods' son that I closed the program talking about last night. I have a moral and an ethical connection to him. If I walk out of a room and I leave a light burning, I have a moral and ethical connection to the 24,000 Americans who will die this year alone, according to the American Lung Association, simply because we burn coal for electricity. 24,000 Americans, including one beautiful, brilliant, wonderful 16-year-old son, recently dead of an unnecessary asthma attack in Cincinnati, Ohio, where because it is blanketed in filth from coal-fired power plants, it has some of the vilest air in the entire United States. There is a real moral connection to what happens in this country between consumer and victim. Agnes walked in here late last night before bed. And, you know, when I start the rerun stream, I just bring it up and listen just like everybody else does to make sure that it's running okay. And I'd left it up and walked out of the room. See? And she came in and she sat down. And she heard the tail end of the program and she heard the Elbert Gervonta Woods story. And she looked at me and she said, Oh, Bob, what's to become of us as a country? And that's the question. What is to become of us as a country? Because you see, eventually, though perhaps we might think it won't, it will come for us. 24,000 Americans die every year because of nothing except, I mean nothing but, the burning of coal for electricity. Not the burning of coal to make steel. Not the coking of coal for metallurgical purposes. No. 24,000 people die every year, according to the American Lung Association, who should know, from illnesses solely, directly, and proximately brought on by the burning of coal for electricity. And those choices are all over the place.
But I see this world perhaps in a more black and white fashion than many do. Marty writing in and says, does it matter where the money comes from, or does it matter what is done with whatever money that comes in, wherever it comes from? I don't think the question is as black and white as you're trying to paint it. If you don't agree, we'll have to agree to disagree here. And we can do that. But, like, where the horn is concerned, the only thing that I have here is my candor with you. I can't buy your loyalty. I can't do anything that will. The only reason we have the listeners we have is that you find in this something worth the most precious thing you own, and that is your time. There are other things you could be doing with it, and you make a decision that there are things you can be. For instance, if you podcast the program, the Dennis and I down in Kentucky, we mow the grass a lot. I didn't know I was mowing the grass with Dennis, but apparently I am. Other people listen in the car. Other people listen other ways. Some of you listen live. Many of you, there's no way to tell what everyone is doing while, no, I really don't have the special romper room the doobie vision. But you spend the time you spend with the horn because the horn is worth it to you. And I've said on a number of occasions that I revere, that I have profound respect for the fact that you are willing to share with us not only your financial contributions, but the most precious thing you have to offer, and that is your time. Because you might get more money. You might get more land. You might get more food. You might get a better car, a better house. I'm turning into a talking head song. But there's only one thing you will never get more of. And that's more time. And the most precious thing of all that you share with us at the horn is your time. And I feel that insofar as you are bombarded with commercial messaging day in and day out, that maybe it's nice that there's one place you can go and not be bombarded with commercials. And that's here. If you hear me talking about a product, you may rest assured that it's not because I've been paid to do it, or bribed, or traded with. It's because it's something that I've found to be good, or valuable, or pleasant, or fun, or informative. Because it means something to me. If I suggest that you buy a book, it's because I've already read the book, and I think the book has information in it that you might find valuable or interesting. And the trade-off to all of that is that the absence of that crass commercialism means that this will continue to be an enterprise which we will either do together or not at all. It's like the question that was asked of me last month in regard to how we fund things here. Suggesting that, you know, maybe I ought to put a little bit of my own money into the horn. And my response was, well, you know, who do you think makes up the shortfall when we have monthly shortfalls? We do. So this is not one long pitch. No. This has much more to do with the nature of the mindless consumerism toward which we are driven like cattle, feeder steers into the chute. Neutered and mindless, just going where we're prodded. I reject that. I hope you reject it as well. It's why I insist on making my own political choices outside the spin and the rhetoric that washes over us daily like a tide of political filth. I have no more patience for it. I have none. You know, after, and you might find this interesting, you might find, after writing about the difference between Ken Heckler and Joe Manchin, I received an email from Mari today over at headonradionetwork.com. You'll find that essay, Manchin versus Heckler, a head-to-head comparison. And Mari schooled me a little bit. She said, I loved your Manchin versus Heckler comparison. You were so right to keep mentioning the fake balance that Joe talks about. It always means big corporation win. And when he talks about making jobs, he means making bigger profits for big coal and so forth. Mari said, I would have liked to have seen one more category or entry on your chart similar to your statement that Joe Manchin privatized West Virginia workers' comp and is likely to think the same way about Social Security, only for Medicare. Medicare. Now, bear in mind that Joe Manchin wants to go to the Senate where he will have a direct impact on your well-being. You in Maine, you in Michigan, you in Kentucky, you in Alabama, you in Mississippi, Louisiana, Washington, Oregon, California. He will have a bearing on your well-being. And he is far more Republican than he is Democrat. The only it was an old political pro in West Virginia who once told me that the only Democrat a member of the Manchin family has ever voted for is another member of the Manchin family. So pay attention to this part from Mari. Joe Manchin forced privatized Medicare Advantage onto state, county, and municipal retirees as a condition of keeping supplementary insurance for which they worked their whole lives. He's likely to work to find more ways to force the rest of West Virginia and the United States onto privatized Medicare Advantage, which would mean a private insurance company controls your network of providers, which can be much smaller than the real Medicare network. You probably already know all this, but I will explain a little. Retirees don't get to choose their Medicare, original Medicare, or Medicare Advantage by private companies. If their former employers choose Medicare Advantage, they mix the Medicare funds for the Advantage plan with the retirees' premiums for their employment-related insurance supplement and the premiums of their former employer. They do not offer a supplement for regular Medicare. Joe Manchin did this by appointing Ted Cheatham. Oh, irony. A former executive of CareLink, which is a subsidiary of Coventry Insurance. CareLink is a health care provider in West Virginia. Joe Manchin appointed Ted Cheatham as director of PEIA, the West Virginia Public Employees Insurance Agency, shortly after he engineering a big raise in salary for the same position. The first thing Cheatham did was for all the Medicare age retirees off original Medicare force all the Medicare age retirees off original Medicare and onto a private Medicare Advantage plan. But, and here's the fun part, not just any Medicare Advantage plan, but lo and behold, Coventry Insurance's Medicare Advantage plan. Cheatham's former employer's plan. Wow, this sounds like Dick Cheney work, doesn't it? After several years of profits, that company bailed when it looked like the feds would cut some of their excess reimbursement for Advantage plans, so now they've forced retirees onto yet another different Advantage plan. I never see any of this about former employers forcing retirees off original Medicare and onto Medicare Advantage in the news. Then Mari says, point four, Manchin, through Cheatham and PEIA, is also forcing advanced directives. What will he do in Congress? You know, I believe in advanced directives. I recommend them. Because if you have a desire not to be in a persistent vegetative state and left there for your loved ones to just sort of hover over you going, Jesus Christ, what's happening? You might want one. You might want an advance directive. so that you can die the way you want to die, because, don't tell anybody, but it's the one thing that every human being on this planet has in common. We're all gonna. But there's still a choice. If you want to be a vegetable, you still have the right in this country to be a vegetable. You want to be Terry Schiavo? You get to be Terry Schiavo. But not with Joe Manchin. Mari says, my insurance company is going to require an advance directive. My insurance is through my former employer, as I am a retiree. It's the primary until the Social Security Medicare kicks in, then it's the supplement. They're going to tie premiums to whether one has a living will advance directive. As we were not well paid and pensions are low, the health insurance is a big part of the deferred compensation. They were going to charge an extra $300 a year for anyone who doesn't have an advance directive. They later changed it to $48, but how long till they raise it is the precedent that concerns me. $300 or $48 being penalized for not making a legal choice? No, sorry, that's wrong. As many people made less than $20,000 a year, their pensions are small and they can't afford this, and therefore are forced to sign an advance directive, and as they're poor and can't afford a lawyer, they sign a very crummy one that the insurance company provides. It is economic coercion. Also, they were talking about dictating where we had to place a copy, some third-party registry, so much for privacy. And Mari says, while I am in favor of advance directives, there is a definite conflict of interest when insurance companies require one and by tying it to premiums. The one they sent to us requires one doctor to find you are terminal or vegetative. The one physician part is already typed in and they don't explain. You can ask for a second opinion. Even convicted murderers get an appeal, Mari writes. In most states, no hospital, no nursing home, no physician or insurance company can require you to have an advance directive in order to provide to get care or coverage, but tying this to premiums does the same thing. Aren't you just loving Joe Manchin a little bit more every day? Because I'm not. But that's okay. He can take all of his great ideas to Washington with him. Oof. Like I said, I think it's going to be a busy little Friday on the front porch. And the food stuff out there. This from a website called France 24. Naturally, it's not going to be in the American for-profit media. Oh, hell no, sunshine. The gospel of high-tech genetically modified crops is not sounding quite so sweet in the land of the converted. A new pest called pigweed is hitting headlines and chomping its way across Sunbelt states, threatening to transform cotton and soybean plots into weed battlefields. You know, I'm reminded of a little place called Enterprise, Alabama. It's a very small town, but in the middle of it, in the town square, there's a monument. It is the only monument on the planet, to the best of my knowledge, dedicated to an insect. It is the boll weevil monument. Because some years ago, that was serious cotton country down there around Enterprise, Alabama, and the boll weevil came through, wiped out the cotton crop, and plunged the region into despair. But as a result of that, the farmers, being farmers, wised the hell up and started planting diverse crops, things that maybe the boll weevil wouldn't get, because the boll weevil likes, it's called a boll weevil, because it's a weevil that likes to live in the bowls of, B-O-L-L, cotton bowls. You got to wonder what kind of a monument they're going to build in Iowa or Kansas or Nebraska, Illinois. to pigweed. In late 2004, superweeds that resisted Monsanto's iconic Roundup herbicide popped up in GM crops in the county of Macon, Georgia. Monsanto, the U.S. multinational biotech corporation, is the world's leading producer of Roundup, as well as genetically engineered seeds. Company figures show that 9 out of 10 U.S. farmers produce Roundup-ready seeds for their soybean crops. We can't live without soybeans right now. If you look on the, go and get any produced item you can find. Read the ingredient label. If it doesn't have corn in it, it's got soy. If it doesn't have soy, it's got corn. A bunch of them have both. Because they are magnificent plants. They are magnificent boons to humankind. The protein that comes from soy is amazing. The pound for pound punch of starch, sugars, and carbohydrates that come from corn. The reason that it went the whole world round after the white folks got done wiping out the Indian populations is because those Indians had crafted a genius grain. And then corporate America got hold of it, and they're working on seeing if they can't build us a nice little global famine out of it. Of course, they'll have the seeds, right? That's what the plan is. Company figures show that 9 out of 10 U.S. farmers produce Roundup-ready seeds for their soybean crops. Superweeds, as they're being called, pigweed, have since alarmingly appeared in other parts of Georgia, as well as South Carolina, North Carolina, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Missouri. According to media reports, Roundup contains the active ingredient glyphosate, which is the most used herbicide in the USA. How has this happened? Farmers over-relied on Monsanto's revolutionary and controversial combination of a single Roundup herbicide and a high-tech seed with a built-in resistance to glyphosate. Today, 100,000 acres in Georgia are severely infested with pigweed. 29 counties have now confirmed resistance to glyphosate, according to weed specialist Stanley Culpepper from the University of Georgia. And then this. Had Monsanto wanted to design a deadlier weed, they probably could not have done better. Resistant pigweed is the most feared superweed alongside horseweed, ragweed, and water hemp. Water hemp? Palmer pigweed is the one pest you don't want. It's so dominating, says Culpepper. Pigweed can produce 10,000 seeds at a time, is drought resistant, and has very diverse genetics. It can grow to 3 meters high and easily smother young cotton plants. And then this. Today, farmers are struggling to find an effective herbicide they can safely use over cotton plants. How about replacing that with today? Islanders are trying to find an animal that they can use to eat the snakes that were brought in to eat the rats. With never a thought to maybe the fact is that we should never have been using this corporatized, genetically modified Frankenseed garbage in the first place. Maybe there's a reason that farming requires close attention to the land and close attention, loving attention to detail. Maybe there's a reason that farmers are special people tied to the land and not merely technocratic feudal serfs married instead to the latest toxic nightmare bubbling and boiling out from Monsanto's hell holes. You see, in other parts of the civilized world, they resist this kind of crap because they understand the dangers that it poses. But not in America. Oh no, not in America, where the corporation is king and the poison is its princely consort. Oh, hell no. Now, there's tons of this stuff this evening. Found a fascinating man out there named John Robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S. John Robbins is a rather interesting man, I think. John Robbins is the scion, S-C-I-O-N, of Baskin-Robbins fame. John Robbins is the only son of Irvin Robbins, the co-founder and co-owner of Baskin-Robbins, and was groomed by his father to run what was at one time the world's largest ice cream company. But John Robbins walked away from the company and the wealth it represented in order to advocate for a healthier and more compassionate way of life. If you want to learn more about John Robbins, you can go to John Robbins, Robbins with two B's, John, R-O-B-B-I-N-S, .info. Over at Huffington Post, in a post from yesterday, he writes, is your favorite ice cream made with Monsanto's artificial hormones? Monsanto has been in the news this week with a U.S. District Court judge ruling that the USDA has to at least go through the motions of regulating the company's genetically engineered sugar beets. Oh, hell, sugar beets? He notes that Monsanto has been called the most hated corporation in the world, which is saying something, John Robbins notes, given the competition from the likes of BP, Halliburton, and Goldman Sachs, and Bob Kincaid adds Massey. He says, this has gotten me thinking about, of all things, ice cream, and how Monsanto's clammy paws can be found in some of the most widely selling ice cream brands in the country. These brands could break free from Monsanto's clutches. So far they haven't, but maybe this is about to change. Ben & Jerry's gets all their milk from dairies that have pledged not to inject their cows with genetically engineered bovine growth hormone, RBGH. Why then can't Häagen-Dazs, Breyers, and Baskin-Robbins do the same? Starbucks now guarantees that all their milk, says John Robbins, cream and other dairy products are RBGH-free. So do Yoplait and Dannon Yogurts, Tillamook Cheese, Chipotle restaurants, and many others. And, you know, Chipotle I found kind of surprising because Chipotle is owned by McDonald's. But ice cream giants Häagen-Dazs, Breyers, and Baskin-Robbins, Breyers, oh, you know, I worry about our dear friend and Internet's most brilliant satirist, Eugene Finnerman. He has a terrible, terrible Edie's ice cream habit. Edie's isn't on this list, but you know what? Absence from the list is not absence of usage. Sorry, Eugene. Ice cream giants Häagen-Dazs, Breyers, and Baskin-Robbins continue to use milk from cows injected with RBGH, a hormone that's been banned in, listen to this, Canada, New Zealand, Japan, Australia, and all 27 nations of the European Union. Well, that means that there's that much more here in America that we've got to use. Dang, dang, science-following countries, not America, won't sing national anthem, bad, won't pledge no Muslim mosque, bad, bad! John Robbins explains, we have Monsanto to thank for RBGH. Monsanto developed the artificial hormone and marketed it aggressively for years before selling it in, of course, in 2008 to Elanco, E-L-A-N-C-O, a division of the, of course, Eli Lilly drug company. Of course, Monsanto and now Elanco want us to think the hormone is... it's safe, it's satisfactory. You know, bovine growth hormone is perfectly safe when used in moderation. Love your shirt! Only it's not. They say that Monsanto says things like, there is no significant difference in the milk derived from cows who have been dosed with RBGH, compared to those who haven't. Only they're lying. Monsanto? Lying? Really? You're kidding. No. John Robbins says, pardon me for not swallowing Monsanto's hooey, but if that's so, why have so many countries outlawed RBGH? Are these countries all run by ignorant Luddites who oppose technology and progress? Or might there actually be compelling reasons? Oops, it turns out there are compelling reasons. One of them is that injecting the genetically engineered hormone into cows increases the level of a substance in milk called IGF-1. Monsanto's own studies found that the amount of IGF-1 in milk more than doubled when cows were injected with RBGH. Studies by independent researchers showed gains as much as sixfold. And by the way, John Robbins doesn't just say stuff. He provides citations to every bit of the science to which he refers. Does it matter whether there are excess levels of IGF-1 in milk? It decidedly did to the European Commission's authoritative international 16-member scientific committee. Their report said the excessive levels of IGF-1 found in the milk of cows injected with RBGH may pose serious risks of, sit down, breast, colon, and prostate cancer. Got milk? Now, how serious is the risk? According to an article in the May 9, 1998 issue of the medical journal The Lancet, premenopausal women with even moderately elevated blood levels of IGF-1 are up to 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer than women with lower levels. Let's do that again. Premenopausal women, women before menopause, not like year before or 6 months before, women who are before menopause. That's any time from the onset of menses up to menopause. Fairly broad swath of the population, the female population there, you would think. Premenopausal women with even moderately elevated blood levels of IGF-1 are up to 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer than women with lower levels. By the way, the artificial hormone also notorious for causing the cows extreme pain and distress. It causes something called mastitis in the cattle. Mastitis is the inflammation and pain in the udder. So that means there are more udder infections in the cattle. So that means, and again, we're back to the, we've got rats, we got to get snakes, now we got to get something to get rid of the snakes that got rid of the rats, now we got to get something to get rid of the things that got rid of the snakes that got rid of, we're back to that. Because an increase in mastitis means an increase in infection rates, and the increase in infection rates means Bossy, Elsie, you know, Borden, whatever, Bossy gets a big old honkin' dose of antibiotics. And because we dose them with more and more antibiotics, you get the, the microbial version of pigweed, which is Franken germs that resist the antibiotics in the first place. Then the increase in udder infections has an effect on the milk. And because it has an effect on the milk, it has a downhill effect on ice cream, cheese, and other products made from RBGH milk that's been treated with antibiotics. Dr. Richard Burrows is a veterinarian deeply familiar with RBGH. He says it results in an increase of white blood cells, which means there's pus in the milk. Yum, yum, under tooled leather. It leaves residues in the milk. It's all very serious. Got milk? The article is lengthy. I've only scratched the surface. It's over at Huffington Post. John Robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S. You can also find it at johnrobbins.info. Pay attention. Monsanto is hard at work on a global freaking famine. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. I'm not kidding at all. But that's enough for me. It's a minute before the hour. I've just filibobstered for a solid hour. Your phone calls are more than welcome at 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4 head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Did you catch that that listener-supported part? Yeah. Head on RadioNetwork.com, contribute tab, PayPal, snail mail address. You know how to use it. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob, and we'll be back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid. Oh, yes, indeed, and I think I've managed to even put myself off my own after-show snack. We call it night lunch around here. You know, my workday doesn't end when the show ends, because it's not like you can just say, screw it, and go to bed. I'm generally all jacked up and wired up and everything after the program ends because, you know, there's a certain amount of energy that goes into all of this. And it's awfully hard, unless I'm just dog exhausted, it's awfully hard to just, oh, I'm off to bed for me.
You know, one of the most frustrating things about stories like that one from John Robbins over at Huffington Post and johnrobbins.info, one of the most frustrating things about that it has to do with my own attitudes. Because a lot of times, for instance, when, say, Richard calls in and tells me that my beloved tomato soup is loaded with high fructose corn sweetener, my response is, screw it, I'll make my own. Because I'm pretty sure I can make a pot of tomato soup that doesn't have high fructose corn syrup in it, because I don't know where to buy the crap. And so when I first started reading the John Robbins article, I thought, well, screw it, I'll make my own. I've got an ice cream churn here. I've got a 14-year-old boy who can turn the crank. But then I realized, no, I can't. Because I don't have anywhere to buy, and this is, you know, this is, at present, this is the failing of, but, you know, Tony Bourdain warned us back on Monday. He said, you know, remember, the same people we hate right now are waiting for us behind the wall because they're buying up the organic industry, too. I saw the guy who runs Stonyfield Farms Creamery, makes yogurt and stuff, talking about how they've mass-produced it, and they're getting it out into the schools, which I guess is a good idea, but they also sell at Walmart. I still haven't found that joint that sells Nancy's yogurt in Beckley, and it's really bothering me. That was one of those things that, you know, like I said, David in Tennessee provided me a quart of the stuff, and I got a little bitty bowl of it, and the rest of it just disappeared. Bless her heart, it disappeared down Agnes mainly, and there's just not a lot of things that she goes, oh, I want to eat a lot of this. And so I really kind of wanted to find the place that had the Nancy's, but I haven't found the place that has the Nancy's yet. But anyway, no. So I thought, yeah, but no, I can't make my own ice cream. I mean, I can make my own ice cream, but I can't find milk that isn't from. Oh, what was it? What creamery dairy operation used to have the? Was it Borden? Was it Borden that said it? Or the milk came from contented cows? How contented can you be when your udders are inflamed and aching from the godforsaken genetically modified artificial hormone that's been given to her to make her lactate harder? Jesus! Are we that greedy? Can we not wait for a cow to get, for a dairy cow to get the hay through the feed and through into the process and actually make the milk? Can we just not wait that long? Apparently not. And of course, some of this has to do with overpopulating the planet and sort of exceeding what nature scientists and biologists refer to as carrying capacity. We have exceeded the carrying capacity of the planet. The planet will do something about it if we don't. That's how systems like this work. And when nature does something about it, it usually doesn't do it gently. Witness Pakistan right now, for instance. But enough of me. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke.
Friday night on the porch. Hallelujah.
Amen.
I was just sitting here watching the repeat of Mr. Stewart's Daily Show. And they were showing the thing where the fella came on to fake noise and had his little card with the yellow. They couldn't afford to bring out the chalkboard for him. Had this card with yellow highlighter and all this stuff, and was showing how all these people were connected, you know, about the Islamic Center up in New York.
Yeah.
And, it was so fun to watch Stewart then take his card and connect, News Corp.
Directly to the Republican Party.
All the way. Oh, no. Well, showed the fact that Fox News is apparently a terrorist organization. You know what I mean? He only did it like about five steps. And, you know, it's one of those things I'm beginning to want. So the first thing I was thinking about was, you know, what's been ticking me off the last few days is, You know what? I want some Democrats to get back in these guys' faces when they start claiming this stuff. Turn it around on them and go, you know, this thing on the mosque. Just ask them, how long have you hated America? And when they say, I don't hate America, they say, well, you hate the Constitution. It's because apparently you hate the First Amendment. Because the last time I checked where it says that freedom of religion, maybe there's an old copy that's got it, but I didn't see no damn asterisks at the end of that line.
No, not in the first.
The bottom says only certain religions apply.
Right, there's no asterisk for only certain religions, and there's no asterisk for, you know, Roger Maris or Barry Bonds, or apparently now Roger Clemens.
Oh, on that I'll get to something else in a minute, but you know, I mean, it's one of those things. I want some Democrats. You know, the only one I've seen lately who's really is getting it, and you know, I say he's a junior senator, so he's not really pushing it. It's Franken. You know, some of this stuff where him and Bernie Sanders, and you know, we need more of them out there. Every time somebody says this, they need to turn it right back around on them. You know, and just absolutely just slap them upside of the head. You know, it's
kill the spit flies. Yes.
Well, you know, it was a thing. Jon Stewart was just doing this thing here on Comedy Central, where he was showing the thing from, it's been 10 years now, but when he was using Charlton Heston and reminding people after Columbine, you remember everybody wanted them not to hold their NRA rally in Denver. And they said, oh no, we have our freedoms. You know, our Second Amendment freedoms. We have the right to go to Denver. So what if it offends some people?
Oopsie.
Yeah, because that's what they're claiming now. It's offensive to people. Well, gee, back then a lot of things that happened on that were offensive. But you know what?
Without going too deeply into the not a mosque, not a controversy.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, can somebody show me anywhere in the Constitution that there is a right not to be offended?
Yeah, you know what I mean. It's one of those things. You know what? I hate this whole thing with Dr. Law. But you know what? Unfortunately, the way our laws are set up, she has the right, as long as it's not those seven magical words of George Carlin's, she can say them. Now, if you don't like them, you can kick her off the air. But you know what? She has the right to say them. You know, even though it's stupid, even though it's, you know, it's one of those things where you just want to ask her, you know, if you can call them the N-word, can I call you the C-word? You know, so, but, you know, it's just one of those things where, unfortunately, that's part of our freedom, is, you know, we're going to have some people show their ass. And unfortunately, she's healed it way too many times. But you know, it's one of these things about with her is I'm just curious why every time they talk about this, they don't talk about the five or six other times she's offended people and had to turn around and apologize. They act like, oh, this is the first time she's ever done it. Oh God. Oh, another thing. Where is our mainstream media? Where are they absolutely just burning fake noise up one side and down the other for all of a sudden apparently their lack of coverage? You know what? Apparently freedom of press means freedom of not having to cover certain stories we don't like. Because, you know, it's amazing how the Iraqi pullout, which is not a pullout, we understand that. But, you know, I mean, what it was, that they had the thing, I think it was today in Huffington Post, where they said it all day yesterday, Fox News covered it for a whole 10 minutes. All together, if you put it all together.
Woo-hoo.
In a whole 24-hour cycle. Ooh, isn't that incredible? And I'm still waiting to hear anybody mention something about News Corp making some kind of donation to some people. You know, I still am just waiting for the next time Beck or Hannity or O'Reilly open their mouth about that and mention the name George Soros. You know, I just want somebody to slap them upside the head and go, who? You know, it's like when George Soros gives $100,000 to some group and all of a sudden they cry he's trying to influence America. It's like, well, gee.
You know what? Speaking of which, Luke, you know I get a lot of right-wing pitches, right?
Oh, yeah.
Every day. Tons of them. And
your name on some fun mailing list.
No, it's that they circulate all these names, and the right-wing media machine knows the name of every human being in this country who is doing talk radio, right, left, or center.
I mean, you're on their list of media.
Yeah, we don't, our side, not so much, but I opened it today, and what did I find? I got to roll down here, just bear with me a second.
Okay.
It's from The World Magazine. You know the World Magazine, right?
It's the do with World Net Daily or something.
No, the World Magazine is a publication dedicated to covering evangelical Christianity.
Oh!
And, no, well, no, they're a pro-evangelical magazine.
Oh, then we got some questions for them.
Right. And, well, but they've decided to attack Jim Wallace. You know, Sojourners Magazine, it's almost an axiom of politics that the cover-up raises more questions than the crime. Ask Chuck Colson about that. In the case of Jim Wallace, oddly enough, we have no crime, but we definitely have a cover-up. And so I mentioned that in 2004, Sojourners, Jim's organization, received $200,000 from billionaire George Soros, a financier of left-wing groups that push for abortion, atheism, bigger government, and other causes. Okay, there's only a problem. There's only one problem. George Soros did, in fact, found an organization. It's a foundation. It gives away money. It's called the Open Society Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And they give away lots of money. Sadly, they've never given a dime to me.
Well,
and I'm one of those guys that would take his money and punch Glenn Beck in the mouth and say, you want to criticize it again? Criticize it again. I'll be happy to punch you in the mouth again. You got 30, you know, you got 32 teeth. I got 32 swings.
And gets tired, I'll switch the other one for a while. Hey, we have no problem with that.
But the thing is here, they equate being given money by Open Society with being given money by George Soros.
I know.
And there's a dramatic difference between the two, Luke. The Open Society Institute was founded by George Soros. It was funded by George Soros, but George Soros doesn't sign off on every last donation that Open Society gives.
He's one of those people who don't believe he has to control every moment of every day it goes on.
Right, because he's not a fascist.
Well, I mean, he's not like Rupert or, what's the guy's name, but Pittsburgh, Mellon Scaife. You know, where they have to control every penny and know exactly who, you know, or have you signed in blood yet telling us that you want Ronald Reagan, you know, canonizes our first American saint.
I mean, dear God, Luke, I mean, who would want anything to do with an organization that does this? The Open Society Foundation's work to improve the lives of the world's most vulnerable people and to promote human rights, justice, and accountability. Damn, that sounds like truth, freedom, and the American way, doesn't it? Oh, they're dangerous. This is ridiculous.
Of course, freedom's dangerous for them people. They don't, you know, them there people. You know, freedom to them's a scary thought because people might actually think that could throw them out in the field.
The Open Society Institute works to build vibrant and tolerant democracies whose governments are accountable to their citizens. Well, God, we can't have that. To achieve its mission, OSI seeks to shape public policies that assure greater fairness in political, legal, and economic systems and safeguard fundamental rights.
Oh. Yeah, well,
but you know what? I can understand why Glenn Beck has such a purple polka-dotted hissy about that.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Corporate America can't work. And frankly, bought-off government cannot work in a system that's open and transparent and responsive to its citizenry.
Well, you know, it's sort of like the night before last, I was watching Mr. Stewart, and he was talking about where some of them were complaining about that, about the 9/11 people, about where the Iman, I believe he is an Iman, who's in this cultural center up in New York, where he'd been on this interview with Ed Bradley right after 9/11, and we're talking about the fact part of it was in response to some of the choices that the American government had made in supporting certain people, certain dictators. And then all of a sudden you have Glenn Beck just decrying this. Then John Stewart plays a piece of tape from about 6 months ago where that's what Glenn Beck was decrying. But how can America make these, you know, deals with these dictators and expect nothing to happen? You know? You know, it's one of these things. It's like, you know what? You know, glass houses and response and transparency.
But the thing is, Luke,
they remember it.
This stuff really, you know, the shame of it all is that this stuff sticks.
Oh, no.
And I kind of vowed that I wouldn't talk about the not a mosque, not a controversy tonight, but I'm going to anyway.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Let me get you something before we get too far off field. The Roger Clemens thing. I want somebody, and I want somebody to question Eric Holder and ask him, Mr. Holder, you're going to spend money going after Roger Clemens for lying to Congress about taking a drug that affected him. But some fellow named Alberto Gonzalez, some fellow named Paul Wolfowitz, some guy named Rumsfeld, and some fellow we call Big Time Dick, we can't do any investigation of them for their lies? But, oh, by the way, we're going to investigate whether or not that guy took a needle and stuck it in his rear end.
You know what, Luke? I'm of mixed emotions on this. I agree with you on that it affected him. I agree with you. And I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly that I would much rather be spending the money going after those aforesaid war criminals that you just mentioned. On the other hand, the shallow part of me says I hope they put him away forever.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I believe in a perfect world he should be investigated, but it's a level of quality more than quantity, and I'm sitting there going, oh, by the way, Mr. Holder, are we going to go back and we've got some tobacco executives we can pull up now?
Some BP guys. How about a nice federal criminal investigation of Don Blankenship? You know, could we do that, Mr. Holder, please? Pretty please?
Can we please pull in all the people from Halliburton and from...
I think what you're saying, Luke, is that there is a significant to-do list before you get all the way down to Roger Clemens.
Yeah, he's on the to-do list, but he should really be down on the bottom of that to-do list. You know what I mean?
And, you know, look, baseball...
I'm not going to be overly lose sleep at night.
No, and the truth of the matter is baseball has an antitrust exemption, right?
Oh, yeah.
We left baseball to police itself. And the problem is baseball will not police itself.
No.
I've got a question, and I think I'm not being a smartass on this. You know, Roger Clemens became very well known later in his career for deliberately throwing baseballs at baseball batters.
Oh, yeah.
And when Roger Clemens threw that baseball, he threw chin music. He threw the kind of brushback pitches that can end lives and careers.
Oh, yeah, he didn't throw it at the body. He threw it at the head.
And the point that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, does baseball not owe it to its own players, if no one else, to deal harshly with this kind of stuff? Because the fact of the matter is, I think there's an open question at this point as to whether or not roid rage caused Roger Clemens to pitch that way.
Oh, I don't, it's one of those things where, you know, there's a lot of other people, you know, if I say, okay, if we're going to do this, folks, can we please bring Sammy Sosa up? I want to hear if he learns to speak English any better yet.
Yeah, because all these right-wingers, they are all about that English only, aren't they?
Yeah, you know what I mean? I still think that was still the one. When I heard that, when that originally happened, I was just like, arrest him right now. Don't even let him leave the room. You know, I'm sorry. Doing the I don't understand English, it's like, no, 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 no.
But you're right. There are a boatload of people who ought to be higher than Roger Clemens on the list.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where I saw the other day where they were talking about the fact that, you know, good old Hot Tub Tom is never going to be apparently facing prosecution. And I'm sitting there going, oh, yeah, we can go after Maxine Waters and we can go after Charlie Rangel, but we're going to let Tom DeLay walk?
Right. And, you know, I know if I was Eric Holder, I'd love to just pick up the phone and call the U.S. attorney who did the indictment of Clemens. Are you bored?
Yeah. Can we find you something to do? You know, there are other crimes. Trust me, there are always police departments that tell us they need help. We'll send you down someplace. You know, we'll find you something. I mean, you know, we're going to, you know what I mean? It's just one of those, but what I was talking about to begin with is I'm getting to the point now with, and I know some of it's just who they picked to bring on the TV. But you know what? I want the DNC or the DSC, or, you know, whoever does the senatorial committee. I want to stick some people out there with some fire in their guts. I want some people out there that, you know, when somebody says something, going to turn around and go, what are you smoking? You know, have you been blood tested lately? Have you peed in the cup? Because, man, you're on something. You know, when I hear these jackasses here talking about Obama and his birth certificate, I'm sitting there going, fine, let me see your long-form birth certificate. And if you can't produce it, will you resign? Because guess what? You can't get your long-form certificate.
No. Everybody gets the short form.
It's like, if you can, then we're going to have you talk to the police because you've broken in someplace to get it. Because you're never allowed, you might even be allowed to see it someday or a photocopy, but you're not allowed to see it because it's locked in the hospital records.
That it most assuredly is.
You know what I mean? Every time you hear one of these jackasses do it, I want somebody there jumping down their throat.
And therein lies the crux of our problem, Luke. When you said, I want somebody there too, it is the absence of the somebody, my friend. It is the absence of the somebody. You know, the right wing literally dominates for-profit, for-broadcast media, over-the-air, terrestrial, cable, etc.
Well, you know, your old employer, and I hate going back to their old nickname.
Chicken Noodle News?
That's what I want to start calling them again. I tell you what, because other than one or two, and one of them is Rick Sanchez, I'll give him some credit for it. He occasionally gets in somebody's face, but most of them, it's like, oh, well, we're going to have to talk to both sides, even though the other person over there says we've been dealing with Martians.
Classic example. I got one for you. Happened today. Give me a minute. Or maybe it happened yesterday. Just got to roll down to it. On the one hand, oh, hell. Okay, maybe it's on Crooks and Liars. Give me it. It was one of those situations. No, it was CNN. It had to be CNN. Because they brought on Paul Begala to talk about people doing phony baloney, stuff about Barack Obama, the mosque, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And he said, you know, the networks
some
that the,
say.
Yeah, no, the networks that the wingnuts like to watch do that, but not this network. Okay. Well, guess what? Does two. Because maybe it was Crooks and Liars. I'll get it here in a second. I want to get this right. Won't take me but a sec. Yeah, there it is. It's a post by Heather at Crooks and Liars. Mm-hmm. And let's see. She says, we've got an economy that's a mess. People who have been unemployed forever that need jobs, massive flooding in Pakistan, millions of gallons of oil and dispersants still floating in the water in the Gulf of Mexico, and what's the media spending hours upon hours covering? That ginned-up non-controversy over the Islamic Center near... Ginned-up? Somebody's listening to the horn, Luke! That's my trite little phrase.
Uh-huh.
That ginned-up non-controversy... What did I say? The not a mosque, not a controversy? Oh, Heather! Heather, I've got a crush. But
Heather, pass my name on, please. Yes.
Well, you know, Matt Osborne's posting at Crooks and Liars now, so maybe more people will find out about the horn. But anyway, she writes, Heather does, during John King's show on CNN, Paul Begala says it's not CNN that's attributing to those poll numbers. You know, the ones that say that Barack Obama is becoming more Muslim by the second. And this is the quote from Begala, Luke. Mostly no. You're right to just observe that as contrasted with Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter, for that matter, or certainly George W. Bush, this Christian president talks about his Christianity less. That perhaps makes him more likely to say, more like, say, George Bush's father, a devout Christian, a fine man who just didn't like to wear it on his sleeve as much as maybe some others. No, in that survey, the Pew poll, the vast majority of people who think he's a Muslim, when you ask him, why do you think that, they say because of the media. And not to put to, and this is Paul Begala, and not to put too fine a point on it, they don't mean CNN, John. They mean the kook right-wing media that has been attacking this president. It's fine to attack him on issues, but they're trying to attack him with any kind of crazy conspiracy theory they can. And then Heather says, I beg to differ, because in almost no time flat during the program, this happened.
For now, though, a growing number of Americans believe President Obama is a Muslim. That's according to a new poll out just today. That poll prompted the White House to issue a statement repeating that he is a Christian. Why is the president's religion so important? Let's get back to our panel and let's get straight to the poll numbers. This is a Pew Research Center poll. What is Obama's religion, they asked. Now, 34% say he's a Christian. That's down from March 2009 when nearly half of Americans
said that. Okay, we know the data here. Let's run forward a hair. Okay, there's Paul Begala. His panel, here we go. There's a picture of him talking to, there's a picture of Barack Obama
at that meeting
talking to Billy Graham. But in a minute, we're going to hear from, there he is. Franklin Graham.
Be born a Christian. The only way you can become a Christian is by confessing your sins to God, asking His forgiveness, and by receiving Jesus Christ by faith into your heart. That Christ died for our sins, shed His blood on Calvary's cross, and that God raised Him to life. If you're willing to accept that and believe that, and let Jesus Christ be the Lord of your life, God will forgive your sins, He'll heal your heart, and that's the only way you can become a Christian. And so if the president has done that, then I would say he's a Christian, if that's what he has done.
In the statement the White House released today in response to this poll, this is one of the things the White House said. The president's strong Christian faith is what guides him through these challenges, but he doesn't wear it on his sleeve. That is a personal choice. Every individual across the world makes a personal choice about whether they practice any faith,
sure,
and then whether they demonstrate that they practice a faith in public. In your experience, and in your experience around your father, who has obviously advised presidents back many decades, do you think that a president should be more demonstrable, more open about his faith?
Well, that's the president's personal choice, and I certainly want to try to advise the president on how he should wear his,
you know, because he's not in the business of advising Muslims.
It's a very personal issue, like it was with President Reagan. And I'm
oh, I got that one. Got me too, Luke.
Ronnie Reagan, who ran from churches.
But the best part of the whole thing was where Franklin Graham said, "Well, you know, he was born a Muslim. You can't be born a Christian, but you can be born a Muslim." I guess what? There's a Muslim gene, Luke? I'm kind of a little lost here.
Well, you know how it is. He's got that Graham gene, and we know where that goes.
Yeah, straight to the bank.
Yeah.
Wow.
How old were you when you got your first white hood?
Hey, Luke, you have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
Hi, bud. You all have a good weekend.
Take care
next week.
Bye now. Brother Luke calling from East Tennessee. Didn't know about that Muslim gene. He was born a Muslim. Oh, Margaret, the crazy, it hurts. We continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
You mean to tell me that all those years of avoiding milk, I was doing the right thing?
I do believe you were, Susan.
Cool. Maybe that's why I never came down with any of those particular cancers. I'm not going to gripe.
Well, you know, I think you were let out of the prostate cancer lottery pretty early,
well,
Susan.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, where's the fairness? Men can get breast cancer, but no, never mind.
Not
going there.
Go there.
Not going there.
Yeah, I can do fine. I have another candidate for the most hated company.
Oh, do please.
Yes, being somewhat older than you. Dow Chemical.
Well, you know what? The chemical empire just gets its own category, because I was going to go Union Carbide, Bhopal, anybody? Hawk's Nest Tunnel Disaster, please? You know, Union Carbide was the author of the two greatest industrial disasters in world history.
Yeah, well, I was thinking Vietnam and Agent Orange, you know.
Well, then we got to drag DuPont in.
Yeah, well, yeah. Let's face it. The whole chemical industry just—if this were the French Revolution, they would be all headed for the guillotine. I'm sorry, they would.
Yeah.
There is just. Since you've already broken your rule, may I argue with you? With you a small bit.
Oh, they do, please.
You
mean the mosque rule? The not a mosque, not a controversy rule. Not a rule.
Right. You said that you basically, disagreed with, the president's position and the whole nine yards.
Right.
Well, I have my issues with Barack Obama. God knows. However, in this one, he's caught between a rock and a hard place. In this issue, he had to take the stand he did, at least the first stand.
Couldn't they have been ready with a knife? Couldn't they have been ready with that what he said a week ago tonight? Couldn't they have been ready with that in case, like for a press conference? Because somebody would ask him about it.
Okay, what he should have done was come out with what he said to my oath demands this, here is this. This is the Constitution. This is how the president is coming down because of my oath. And this is all I'm going to say. But his problem was, then he started walking back.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, look, Susan, the White House issued a statement today reassuring America that Barack Obama believes in talking snakes.
Yeah, I know. That's just flat stupid.
And see, I'm getting it's moments like this, Susan, that I find myself thinking, you know, if we could just take all the religionists and put them in one place and give them all chainsaws, Muslims, Hindus, Christians, the lot of them, and all of us normal people could just stand back and watch them wipe each other out, because they will. They'll do it down to the last man or woman.
Yeah.
Because even if the Christians beat the Muslims or the Muslims beat the Christians, then they'll turn on each other.
The drawback to it is...
Screaming heretic all the way.
Yeah, the drawback to that is sooner or later, one will end up standing.
Now, well, you can take that one out with a 30-06.
Yeah.
And see, I mean, I hate it when I say things like this. But this drives me nuts.
Haven't you figured out yet? This is no longer the United States of America. This is
the United States of Jesus Land.
No, this is the insane asylum of America.
I really wish it was, Susan.
This is, honest to God, a giant insane asylum, and the patients have taken over.
Yeah, it's one big production. It is one big production. I can never remember the full title of it. Let's
one
see.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
No.
Who was in it?
No, well, it's not who was in it. It's just... yeah, okay, it's a Peter Brook and Adrian Mitchell film based on a play. And the full title of the play is, wow, this is a little diversion. It's generally just referred to as Marat Sade, but the full title of the play is The Persecution and Assassination of Jean-Paul Marat as performed by the inmates of the Asylum of Charenton under the direction of the Marquis de Sade.
Okay.
It's just called Marat Sade. And yeah. That's, you know, it's a magnificent little piece of theater, and I always wanted to do it. But that's what it is. You know, it's a bunch of people in an insane asylum doing it's a play within a play. And I guess that's where we are today. You know, and we're under the direction of the Marquis de Sade.
Yeah. Because you ordered either that or Dante.
So, well, yeah, Dante's a definite possibility, without a doubt.
Or, you know, as far as your issue with making your own, getting your own milk, find yourself
a cow,
and you just might be able to find it in your area. Find yourself a really, really tiny home dairy. One or two cows.
I've looked.
None, huh? Well, your only alternative is to get a cow and learn how to milk.
Or a goat. No, I don't like goat's milk. I just don't. Tastes funny.
I don't like goats either. Goats are obnoxious. I'm sorry. They just are. Of course, then again, cows are obnoxious.
Yeah, You'd be obnoxious, too, if somebody was grabbing you at 6 o'clock every morning, but who the hell am I?
Yeah, with cold hands.
Right.
I would probably be really, really cranky, too. Yeah.
This program is fast spinning out of control, Susan.
I just went blank. Oh, God.
You bring out the worst in me. First you bring out the prostate comment, and then I think you mean to.
Hey,
I think you mean to.
I live to serve, you know. I take your mind off things and, you know, get you thinking of weird things. That way you're not thinking of things you shouldn't be. How's Agnes doing?
She is frustrated. Waiting for, you know, she's in the medical equivalent of waiting for Godot.
Oh, yes, been there, done that.
You know, we hope that she will have the surgery this coming Wednesday. But then this evening she sat down with me and said, Bob, I can't do this. I mean, school's starting. I'm going to be down for 3 weeks. I mean, I said, oh, yes, you are.
Message for Agnes. Agnes? Shut up. Have the surgery.
I will pass that on, Susan. Thank you.
You have a nice weekend, honey.
You too, dear. You too. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and we roll onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. I'm hoping for the best, of course, for Agnes with the surgery. Right now, my beloved, he's a blind 12-year-old doggy there, Casper O'More. He's over at the animal hospital there overnight. He had an intravenous fluid. He's barely hanging in there, but I hope all in the Horn family can pray for my best brother ever, my best doggy pet ever, Casper O'More. If you can, folks, I will be most thankful, and Casper will too. Me and Casper did pray this past weekend early this week for what we thought was this week for the operation for Agnes there, for Auntie Agnes, and of course for the health of Auntie Agnes and Uncle Bob, of course.
Thank you, Brian.
The fact is, I wanted to get in. That's what we try to be, a family. And the American family, Bob, the American family has got to come together, but it's got to be in a sane way that it appreciates the fact, understands the simple fact that, you know, it's like a simple, Mike Moy had it on the other night, another great column by Mr. Mark Morford, that we just have to admit that global warming is happening, and that we can't just, that the other hand go and not dare take on the corporations and the polluters that caused it, namely, but we have to admit that it's mankind that has caused it. Well, and just come to that simple, sane solution. And in America, too, we just had 8 years of a twice not elected dictatorship under Bush and Cheney. And in spite of the vote suppression, my fellow Irish American lad, Barack Obama, in 2008, he did win the election. There's some information out there that many millions of black and Democratic and other minority votes were depressed or switched by the Republican, the Christian identity movement voting machines. But the fact is, as a country, we've got to come together. And I'm going over this. First of all, that mosque, quote unquote, is supposed to be it's a community center that general area of Ground Zero, right?
Yeah, it's gonna have a kitchen in it. It's gonna have a movie theater in it. It's gonna have cardio glide machines and stair climbers and a basketball gym and maybe a handball court.
I know. That would be the last. If I were going to have security against preventing ever again another 9/11 attack or any kind of major, huge casualties inflicting attack on American soil, we already been hit there twice in January, February of 1993. It was hit the first time by some of those bastards in February 93. And then, of course, again, it was destroyed totally, suspiciously, 2 months after Lawrence Silverstein bought up the whole World Trade Center complex for an $8 billion insurance deal there. But the fact that I don't want to get into the world demolition and all that, too, but the fact is the last place I could imagine where it would have – the first place where it would have the best security other than the Pentagon, which the Pentagon was supposed to massive air defenses all around it. It long before September 11th, 2001 happened, but that's another point too. But it would be, the fact is, any place that would have high security, any such militant actions or a terrorist attack especially, it would be ground zero in that whole area of Manhattan. And it's ridiculous that that area where that this place is supposed to be is well away from the actual Twin Towers place. The World Trade Center complex is a huge area it takes up. The fact is, and I'm going over a story. I love Matt Osborne. And I think he's a great newsman there. Like I was saying, when you went to Netroots Nation there, they had at least one honest newsman there named Matt Osborne there in Alabama. I read another piece he had about this Democrat, I believe his name is Edwards, who wants to run for the judiciary or the Supreme Court of Alabama. He sounds like a really good man. He read about the man. But the piece there by Bob Berry in August 18th on consortiumnews.com about how the mosque Fuhrer is endangering our own United States troops. The right is making people pay over a mosque near Ground Zero, but U.S. troops may pay with their lives, writes Robert Perry. You know, he's talking about that they're doing the flood relief right now. Some troops,
right,
at least in Pakistan and Iraq, of course, they have the phony pull out of the troops there where they're being replaced by the State Department's up, you know, escalating its number of private contractors, private and huge quotation marks, the way they gouge the American taxpayers, these Blackwaters and the rest. They can rename themselves, but they can't. That doesn't end the criminality that they actually committed. But the fact is, that's the fact. It's this type of a rhetoric against all Muslims that I don't know what kind of lunatic, but I guess the last 8 years of George W. Bush and Cheney helped, and the right-wing media, the war-loving, violence-worshipping media helped this along, but it was never supposed to be where these 19 radicals, 15 of them from the Bush crime family's close Saudi Arabia ally, 15 of them, from that committed the September 11th attacks. It was not meant to be to then launch into a war on 1.5 billion Muslim fellow human beings on this planet and to dehumanize them. It's disgusting.
But you know, Brian, you said something a couple of minutes ago, and you've expanded on it, and I can't help wondering if maybe this isn't the crux of the matter. You said, you know, the World Trade Center was attacked in 1993 and 2001 by those criminals, you know? And you know what? You're absolutely correct. That's what they were. They weren't warriors. They weren't mujahideen. They were criminals. They were criminals.
They were not the military forces of Germany, Nazi Germany invading Poland September 1st. 1990.
No, they weren't even the military forces of Saudi Arabia. But the point is, and I think this is worth expanding upon, Brian, if you recall when that happened, what now may be referred to as all those years ago, when that happened, what was the right-wing response? What did the Douglas Feiths and the Wolfowitzes and the Bloody Crystals and the rest of that filthy crowd, John Bolton?
He wanted targets to be planned and cited and hit, really.
But not just that. They had
in Iraq.
Brian, they had a catchphrase.
Which wanted to hit Iraq.
They had a catchphrase running up to the Iraq War. You liberals, you want to treat this like a crime.
Right. And yeah.
And they wanted to treat it like a reason to go to war. But it was a crime, and it is a crime, and it remains a crime. And it will, this kind of conduct remains criminal conduct. It's cost us billions, if not trillions of dollars to find it out, and it's a hard lesson. But you know what? They needed to treat it as an act of war and not a crime. Because a crime, Brian, can be solved. There is not an unsolvable crime in the world, but there are lots of unwinnable wars. But this thing, you really, really hit on something, Brian, because it goes deeper. You know, it's got roots. Like Granny Clampett used to say, it's got roots in his liver. The fact of the matter is, they needed to treat it like a war because those rotten, bloodthirsty bastards wanted a war with Islam.
Right.
Whereas if you treated these guys as criminals, it doesn't matter what their religion is, but the, you know, okay, sure, maybe we'll talk about it in the phase where we establish criminal intent in the trial. But their religion doesn't matter. The mens rea and the actus rea of the crime is what matters.
And these guys wanted a war because they wanted to attack Islam. It's that simple.
Right. If the war profiteer gets so much more money out of that huge enemy of over 1 billion people than they can get 19 nutcases on September 11th, 19 criminals on September 11th, or whatever.
Well, look, it turned Eric Prince into a multimillionaire, didn't it?
I know. Oh, disgusting. And, you know, as a Catholic, I'm a fallen Catholic, and, you know, I'm disgusted. I've left them. I've the Church of England, the Anglican Church, I'm much more interested with it. I guess it has some of the same Catholic rites. It's Catholic light to some people. And this present Pope there, I think he was a true believer as a Hitler Jugend member there. And I having these prejudices there with those poor victims of the criminal terrorist against children, the priest that molested the children, that having prayer sessions ain't nearly enough to wipe out that dishonor on the Catholic Church. But at the same time, Eric Prince, too, he converted as he went further and further into this Iraq occupation and these wars abroad for his profit at the Blackwater, whatever the company's name, he's converted to Catholicism to gain Christian absolutionism, what's the term?
Absolution?
Absolutely, yes. And that was okay for the Knights of Malta, Bob, in the Mediterranean or in Crete and other, the Knights of Rhodes, where the Ottoman Empire and other Islamic forces invading Christian lands where they had to defend themselves and use deathly violence. That was okay for those knights to take that absolution, but it doesn't clean up anything Eric Prince is corrupt profiteering company has done by his being absolved, quote unquote, with the taking the Catholic rite of absolution. It's nonsense. And these right wingers, again, with coming together as a family, we have to, Bob. The fact is, as a Democratic family too, we have to remember 102 Democrats voted against the recent Obama $37 billion for the Afghanistan continuing quest. 102 good House Democrats. We can't let them just be destroyed and be disposed of in November 2010. And also at the same time, the right wing Republicans. I go back to the December 2009 vote. The massive increase in Veterans Administration and health care for our veterans, the returning veterans. The Democrats are always praying for peace to break out so that not only Afghans and Iraqis can stop dying, but our own kids can stop dying. And every Democrat voted for that increase in veteran affairs and health care funding. Not one single Republican in the entire House of Representatives voted for that increase in veterans' health care funding in December 2009. That's the so-called it's we have here. That's that. It's disgusting. But I just I'll let you go there. And you know, the main thing. I was just hoping to hear that the Agnes through the opera. And I'm just tuning in a bit late. I'm sorry. But but at the same time, I'll keep me and Casper will keep praying for you. And folks can keep Casper in their thoughts.
Absolutely, Brian. In fact, I got a note from Cindy up in Washington State, and she said, "Tell Brian I send my best wishes for his doggy." And
okay, there are children too that they really are. But I'll let you go there, buddy. There. Oh, and how's is Fergie still the like the team manager there now? He's the
no, he's nice. He's walked away. He's walked away from it, Brian. He's decided to pursue a different course.
He's got another contract with another football program and another
well no no he's not the, he is not the player to be named later since it looks like he can't do a lot of strenuous activity lo and behold and
yeah.
It kind of warmed the cockles of his daddy's heart that they don't do this for ninth graders but they put him in drama class.
That's believe me, that's something. There's communication everywhere that we need, the internet and everything. That's something that he's got that gift from his dear old dad, I'm sure. So that sounds like a perfect fit for Fergie too. That sounds like a great fit. Let you go though, and God bless you.
I can teach him a lot more about not turning his back on the audience than I can about how to run a cover too. So there's some potential there.
Oh, you have a good night, sir.
You take care, Brian.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And our best to Casper.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And Jim writing in, he says, All my best for Casper. Been there. God bless him. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very, very much. And we're going to continue. We're going to just roll along, taking calls in the order in which they were received. That's how it works around here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, speaking of the theater, they're about to unleash a big play on us with this Israeli-Palestinian talk.
Yeah, did one eyebrow go up when you read that? Because mine
not
did.
Not only that, but the main thing for me is because I was a big follower of the Ireland peace process, because I think that's very interesting, because you bring in the so-called terrorist group and they become part of the electoral process, so they are a part of the process now. But no, in Israel they ask, is Hamas going to be representative? No, you know.
No.
And so, to me, just that in itself, I'm sorry, I can't take it seriously, because, hello, last I heard, Hamas was voted in by a large portion of them people in the open-air prison, right?
Well, yeah, and open-air prison, God. Yeah, democratically, clean election, but no, we don't know. Can't,
right,
no.
So,
since you brought the topic up, though, Sandra, let me ask you a quick question. I saw a post over at Crooks and Liars last night, posted by Ian Welch.
Mm-hmm.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's unguarded talk on video, how I destroyed the Oslo Accords and how easily Americans are manipulated. It's a video, and it's entirely in Hebrew because it was shot in, well, it was shot over there, and little Bibi Netanyahu didn't know it was being shot.
Well, yeah, it was on the living room. He was talking to some a victim of some attack, I think, you know, and he was sort of explaining, you know, how the U.S. is, you know, easily manipulated. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I read that and it just made me scream. I wish I spoke Hebrew, because I'd love to. You know how I am about translations, but a couple of these, you know, if this was anybody else in any other country in the world, this would be the kind of stuff that forms the basis of a war crimes indictment with regard to the Palestinians. And this is a 9-year-old tape.
Yeah, it was 2001, I think.
Yeah, and he says, with regard to the Palestinians, the plan is to hit them hard. Not just one hit, but many painful hits, so that the price will be unbearable. The price is not unbearable now. A total assault on the Palestinian Authority to bring them to a state of panic that everything is collapsing. Fear that everything will collapse. This is what we'll bring them to. Well, isn't implicit in that statement, doesn't that presuppose an attack on civilian infrastructure, Sandra?
Well, it has to be anyway, because, I mean, it's not like the Palestinians are dealing with some sort of behemoth economic power. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not like they have anything that would be attacked outside of civilians. You see what I'm saying? They've already brutalized every system there. So the only thing that's left is to directly attack civilians, right?
What's left?
I mean, I'm saying,
there's no army in the field.
Right, and the resources have already been commandeered by the Israelis, the water. I think they've diverted like 70-80% of the water. The constant destruction of the farmland of the Palestinians. And, you know, so there's nothing of real value left. So one can assume that now they will take out the people.
But you know what? And what a, there's no way to talk about this without being a total horror. But getting my nose rubbed in it as an American it just really, really gets under my skin. The woman in the video asks Netanyahu, what happens? Won't the world object to what Israel's doing to the Palestinians? And then he starts talking about the United States. He says, I know what America is. America is a thing that can be easily moved in the right direction. Let's suppose that Americans will say something about it to the Israelis. So they say it. God, this is dialogue from The Godfather, Sandra.
Oh, not only that, but he also mentions how gullible the opinion, you know, the opinion of Americans are, and like he's quite in awe that 80% at that time, you know, was sort of okay with the situation there. you know, basically saying that the U.S., I mean, the people are so stupid, we won't have any problems, you know, getting what we need. You see what I mean? I mean, that's 9 years ago. And unfortunately, the fact that he's being invited with Obama supposedly sitting around, too, I mean, this whole thing is just makes me feel nauseous. It's like, really? You know?
Yeah, and this business coming out about how the Obama administration has assured the Israelis that they don't have to attack Iran for at least a year.
Well, that in itself is just the whole language and dynamic is so weird. It's like, hello, which one is the client state again? You know, I was confused.
Yeah, just checking. Right.
I'm like, oh, wait. Who the hell is a superpower in this? You just see what I'm saying? The way it was framed, it was so bizarre. That story was well weird to me, Bob.
Well, implicit, and it was disturbing to me, Sandra, because implicit in it isn't it implicit in this thing that the United States sort of acknowledges that sooner or later Israel will attack Iran? Did you walk away with that? Because I walked away with that.
There is that, too, along with this other freak show that was published about Bolton talking about, oh, they only have a matter of days. Did you hear about that story?
John Bolton wanted Israel to attack Iran in the next 9 days. Not 10, not 8, but 9.
Yes. But the thing is, and for this story to come along, I mean, a part of me just thinks, well, I'm not buying it. What I'm buying is the fact that Israel is going to find a way to attack. I'm sorry, I can't shake it. And this little reassurance coming from President Weakass.
President Not Sure.
Not sure, and also next month all them freaks are going to be in Washington, you know, and doing what? It's going to be Annapolis all over again. Remember that fiasco?
Yeah.
No, that was a horror show. It was like, come on. And then now we're going to get this just in time for the sort of re-election. I mean, it's all so obvious. It's painful. You know, I don't buy any of it, and I find Netanyahu to be a sociopath. So I'm kind of the way he rolled Obama and had him looking. Remember that? How disgusting that was.
Oh,
God, it made me sick.
But you know,
bowing. I'm like, what the hell is that?
But the thing is, this whole New York Times article, Sandra, is a case of buried lead, because the headline is U.S. assures Israel that Iran threat is not imminent. Okay. But if you read it, what you find out, the headline should have been, U.S. tells Israel all Iran shit is broke down. Because that's what it is. Their centrifuges don't work. It's a mess.
Well, no, but see, no one ever talks about the. Remember when they always celebrate the attack when Israel bombed Saddam?
Oh, Assarak, yeah.
Yeah, but the idea that you need to take away from that is that, well, no. The fact that they did that caused Iraq to implement whatever hideous weapons of mass destruction they came up with. You see what I'm saying?
Again, we're back to rats, snakes, and mongooses.
Well, no, but it's like what Israel does exacerbates every freaking situation. When they were making noises on the Lebanese border the other week, I was like, oh, here we go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't trust them. They are the aggressors in that part of the world, okay? Across the board. And that story should tell you that. If the U.S. feels a need, they have to reassure. Reassure what? You know, where am I?
Again, you know, I've said this stuff before, Sandra, but it bears repeating, I suppose, because, well, for starters, it makes me nuts. All of this whole story in the New York Times was, and if they go at a dead run and everything works right, they might, maybe, sorta, kinda, could possibly, if they hold their tongues just right and stand on one leg, the Iranians might be able to come up with enough material for two nuclear weapons.
Well, no. I'm sorry. What happened to the NIE assessment of 2007? Oh, wait. We're supposed to pretend that didn't really happen. Oh,
yeah, the memory holes. That's down the memory.
Because that, you know what that was? That said, no way in hell are they going to able to have this capability courtesy of the American intelligence community. But we're supposed to sit here and pretend that didn't exist now and that the Iranians are a threat? No and no.
And see, the thing is, even if, and that's the whole point, even if you take this whole article at face value, Sandra, take the whole thing at face value, and they get those two nuclear devices, that's Iran has two, Israel has 200.
Oh, no, their whole...
Iran has two, Pakistan has 50. Iran has two, India has 100. Iran has two, the United States has 2,000.
No, I mean the whole...
But Iran's the threat?
No, it's absurd. No, Israel is the threat. And the article, just it, the existence of the article that, you know, we got to make public some way of pacifying some maniac country, which is what it sounds like to me. It's like, oh, my God, you know, Obama's sitting around or whoever is sitting around talking about we can't have this freaky Israel bomb some country right now. I'm trying to get reelected, right?
Well, welcome. Yeah, politics.
Right. So, I mean, no. Don't even. It is. It's a really disturbing thing in, combined with them people coming over here for some chit-chat.
But there's other stuff out there, Sandra. I just ran across this one. I think I was over at BuzzFlash. A rabbi from one of the most violent settlements in the West Bank was questioned on suspicion of incitement last week as Israeli police stepped up their investigation into a book in which this rabbi sanctions the killing of non-Jews, including children and babies. The guy is Rabbi Yitzhak Shapira, and he's one of the leading ideologues of the extreme right wing of the religious settler movement in Israel. He advocates something that they refer to, and wow, as the price tag policy of reprisal attacks. In other words, you kill one Israeli, they want to kill 100 Palestinians. That's the price tag policy.
Well, I can't even believe what you just said. Wow, okay.
He's written a book. It's called The King's Torah. And it offers ideological justifications for widening the scope of these price tag reprisal attacks to include killing Palestinians, even children. And he doesn't use the word Palestinians in the book. He uses the word Gentiles.
What?
Yeah, I mean, this is Israel.
Like gringos? Come on, man. What's happening? That's why I was laughing when you were talking about Franklin Graham, you know, with the whole saying that Muslims is some sort of father transfer type.
Yeah, it's a genetic disorder.
It's the belief system.
You can't be born. You can be born a Muslim, but you can't be born a Christian.
No, that's BS, though. The only religion you can be born of is this freaky Israeli religion, as far as I can tell. You know what I'm saying? And the fact that he's getting it all confused, Franklin Graham, he really needs to go away. My goodness, what an idiot.
Oh.
He's an idiot.
I want him into the steel cage with the chainsaw among the first.
But what's dangerous is that how many Americans believe that being Muslim is not a belief system but some sort of hereditary pass-along thing? You know what I'm saying? That's what stopped me in the tracks. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. It ain't no different to being a Christian. You can just decide, I want to be a Muslim. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I read the book, and apparently if you say, according to the book, according to the Quran, if you say there is no God but God and Muhammad is his prophet, congratulations, you're a Muslim. No more barbecue for you.
Well, no, exactly. It's like all my family have been, you know, Democrats for a while, but I decide to be a Republican. I mean, it's the same thing. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I just, but it's appalling because this whole thing going to what you said, which I really want you to tell me that you didn't say that the Obama administration released the statement saying that this freak is a Christian. They actually did that?
Oh, yeah. They entered, because of that Pew Research poll that I talked about yesterday, They released a statement today. Oh, Jesus, what did it say? Hang on, I got it here. Because, the words matter. Let me scroll back down to it. I promise I've got it right. Yeah. They introduced a statement saying that President Obama is a Christian and he prays every day and his Christianity guides his decision making, but he doesn't wear it on his sleeve.
Okay, listen. If Obama was able to release a statement saying he wasn't black, he would. All right? At this point.
Okay. You know, you've got so many toasters, Sandra.
Sorry, what the hell? And also, more importantly, so what if he is? That is the underlying whole thing about this that's scaring me. It's like, oh, wait a minute. What? If he is a Muslim, then what? Off to
But you see, Sandra, inside weird-ass Christianity, there has always been an undercurrent of exclusivity. To the point that, you know, is it St. Augustine of Hippo in the City of God, or, you know, one of those ignorant freaks who didn't know why it rained but could count angels dancing on the head of a pin, who grandfathered Socrates into heaven.
Oh, yeah.
They declared Socrates a homo Christianus naturaliter.
Are you saying St. Augustine? Is that what you're...
Yeah.
Yeah, no. You got me there. Yeah, you're right. As soon as you brought up the Socrates, I'm like, oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, now Socrates, and they did that because everything that Socrates preached was in line with Christian doctrine. You know, he did all that preaching 330 years before the birth of Christ.
Right.
And so he couldn't just be a good man wandering out there having great ideas. He had to be a Christian to bolster the young religion.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah, yep.
And so Christianity has to do that. You know, it goes back to that statement by that fundamentalist freak whose name I've mercifully forgotten, who said he would rather have the biggest Christian idiot in government than the most intelligent atheist.
Okay, yeah, yes.
It's the same thread, Sandra.
Well, no, but see, back to the... clarifying that I'm not a Muslim, it's just so disturbing because it's like he's just feeding into this sort of hysteria about it all. That's the thing.
I just want you to know that I am not a Muslim and I can't even spell falafel.
It's just so... that's why if there was... You remember when he was running, all of a sudden women with head covers on, they disappeared from a photo? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so we're back to that again.
Yeah, it's the Pepsodent commercial. You'll wonder where the Muslims went. You'll wonder.
And I don't mean to constantly berate, you know.
No, but you're not berating, Sandra. These guys are clueless.
It's unbelievable. I can't even believe. So I didn't hear that until I started listening to your show. I thought he did what? So I'm just sort of stupefied by that.
And you know, Ron and Raleigh writing in, Sandra, to say, as time goes on, the subject line of the email is President Not Sure. And he says, as time goes on, the more I believe we've elected Juan Williams.
Well,
that's cold.
When I think of Juan Williams, though, I'm thinking of that fool supporting Clarence. I'll never forget that. I'm like, who is this freak? Right there supporting his good friend, Clarence. I got a white wife, Thomas. Come on now. They all... Yeah, he's horrible. Oh, God, I don't know about lumping Obama with him. That's so insulting.
Like I said, that's bad cold.
That's real cold. Wow. Yeah, well, anyway, I mean, I suppose Obama really can't win, but I don't have no mercy because no one held a gun to his head to be president, so I'm not going to stop.
There's that, and there's the fact that, I mean, this guy, I mean, he's a smart guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, I'm not debating that, per se. I just...
So why has he surrounded himself with the clueless, two left feet, politically speaking, the ninnies?
Oh, no, it's incredible. And, you know, I got to say, which is a little bit off, but listen, I'm telling you, Paul Krugman is blowing up the world. That fool is on hit. He predicted all of it. All of it. I really am sort of beyond impressed with... Mr. Krugman these days, because Jesus.
Yeah, his magic eight ball is on fire.
He's all over it, like, nonstop. And the good thing about him is that you can't really avoid it, because it's right there on a New York effing Times.
I saw a thing over at Truth Out today where he sort of went away from, because I guess he's writing and letting Truth Out publish some other stuff.
Right, I saw that too.
But the brilliant column called Facts Don't Lie, But Republicans Do.
Right. No. He's sort of putting, you know, obviously, I think the man is quite disturbed, like seriously, about what's going on. And did you get that email I sent you?
Yeah, I did.
With the, I guess that was Dean Baker, but isn't that an amazing quote?
Oh, that thing blows me away. Let me pull it up real quick because it deserves to be shared.
It's just like, I was like, oh. I thought only in economy.
And you know, I sat, Sandra, and I read this, and I really, I mean, I'm not a navel gazer, okay? I'm not. I don't have a lotus pond, you know, no bow tree, no nothing. But I read this, and I just sat there and stared at it. And as you noted in your email, this quote comes from from economist Dean Baker. I've met the man. He's really a nice guy and incredibly intelligent. And he said, no progressive movement will make any progress until we understand the battle we are fighting. Our income is a cost to the rich. They will look to cut it wherever they can, whether this is wages for private sector workers, pensions for public employees, or Social Security for retirees. That is their target. And that, I mean, that's distilled down to a level that is haiku-esque, if that's a word, Sandra.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was crazy. I was just like, what? And that was just in an article that he wrote. And I was just like, are you kidding me with that? So that's why I highlighted it, because it was just, it's too on with at least what we talk about, at least what I forced to be talked about on this show, because it's so short, but the whole idea that our income is a cost to the rich, that's it. That is the key sentence there.
But when it is the key sentence, and when you examine that as a function of modern truth, Sandra, it also points the way to the fact that the entire system, as the framers and the founders of this country envisioned it, has completely broken down and been replaced with a monstrosity.
Right, and it's just sort of, you know, but the whole idea of, to equate everyone else's income as a liability to the rich, I think is just brilliant. You see what I mean?
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that set me thinking when I read this, I was reading this about the same time that I was getting a note in from Matt Osborne about his first post over at Crooks and Liars, in which he argues successfully, I think, that the reason the not a mosque, not a controversy is being painted as it is because of how right-wingers view rights issues. And he says, and this is brilliant, Sandra, he said, New York's governor weighed in on the Cordoba House yesterday, claiming his efforts at arranging an alternative site were close to fruition. Patterson might as well find an alternate bridge across the Alabama River. Why march through Selma when you can go miles out of your way to cross at Prattville, or an alternate lunch counter to Woolworth, or an alternate drinking fountain, or even an alternate seat on the bus? As in the civil rights era, there cannot be a neutral ground. And he continues. He says, and this is the gravamen of it. This is this is so in line with the Dean Baker quote. He says, you'll excuse me if I take freedom very seriously, and not merely my own, but that of others. To progressives, there is no difference. To regressives, and then here's the home run right out of the park. The rights of one subtract from the rights of another. The relative distance of a mosque or community center or titty bar from ground zero makes no difference to the zero-sum mindset, which is why regressives seem impervious to facts.
Yeah.
See, we see the expansion of rights as a net good to society, whereas, and he points out, it was Jeff Sessions I think it was the Sonia Sotomayor hearings, who said that empathy for one party is always prejudice against another. And it's so true. It's so true. And so when I see that and I set it up side by side with the notion that our income is a cost to the rich, It paints a picture of an America that is becoming a very, very frightening place, Sandra.
And let me add this one little quote, which is what I found. It sort of represents some of the comments that, go along with any kind of analysis of rich poor dichotomies. It was like this. Most of Americans favor the rich. Get over it. They provide for us unless they are rich Democrats. Isn't it every American's dream to be rich someday? I don't like the idea of some idiot telling me that if I get rich, I'm a bad guy. That right there, it just really, yes, that mentality is everywhere too. Don't forget. And I, you know, I don't, I know it's nasty because I was just like, are you kidding? But that is sort of indicative of the kind of commentary you get when people write stuff like Mr. Baker or Paul Krugman, for that matter.
Yeah, it's almost like pardon the sports analogy, but people like Baker and people like Krugman have that Gretzky gift. You know, they say that Wayne Gretzky could see where the puck was going to be, 50 seconds out. And it is as though Dean Baker and Paul Krugman can see what a collapsed America looks like.
Well, and Dean Baker was one of the few, and I say few, who was, revving up the wait a minute about the bubble back in 2004. I mean, he's not coming to the table new. In fact, he should be, in the Obama administration, as far as I can tell. I don't know.
Well, or else if he was in the Obama administration, he would already have been chased out by Glenn Beck or neutered. Didn't Obama's chief economic advisor quit the other day?
Yeah, the one from Berkeley, the economist. The thing about her is interesting that apparently she was like, shit, if I stay here over 2 years, I lose my tenure at Berkeley. What would you do, Bob?
I'm gone.
Okay.
But she also said, I'm here and I've got a position and I've got a title, but ain't nobody listening.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I don't know. Obviously, that is probably what she's putting forth. What I was talking about was what I read later. I was like, well, who's going to give up tenureship at UC? They got it.
No way.
Especially for the bullshit that's going on in the Obama administration. Anyone can see how anyone would be thrown under the bus, so... Yeah, you're not going to – loyalty must be kind of a – I don't know about loyalty. I know in the Bush administration it was everything. This administration, not
– Oh, Karen Hughes threw her own family under the bus to come back.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, as much as I loathe the Bush administration, why is it that I can't associate loyalty with the one that I supported, Bob?
I know.
And, it bugs me. But anyway – another thing I noticed, you were talking about the food thing. There's been a typhoid outbreak. Have you heard about this one?
Yeah, and bed bugs. And
the typhoid thing, I was like, hello? But that was from pulp for smoothies.
That part, oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, geez. And the eggs.
Yeah, the egg, yeah, right.
The food thing is sort of...
Well, okay, since you opened that door, I got one more for you.
Oh, God.
We had the formula scare a while back because the melamine poisoned baby formula was killing the Chinese babies.
Yes.
Well, they've still got formula problems. You know how I was talking about the RBGH, the bovine growth hormone?
Mm.
Well, just like the United States, and I'm tired of these comparisons, frankly, just like the United States, China... has no infrastructure, no legal infrastructure, no administrative regulatory infrastructure in place to deal with that poisonous crap. Now, all the EU won't have anything to do with it. Australia, Japan, nobody wants anything to do with that god-awful garbage. But, between America and China, well, we can keep Monsanto in business and now Eli Lilly.
Oh, yeah, no. When you said you're sick of those analogies, it's like, where are we at? Where are we living? Because that should not be something that you link together.
Well, dig this. This comes out of, and once again, it's an unfavorable comparison between the American for-profit media and the Chinese state-run media. This latest disclosure, again from johnrobbins.info, this latest disclosure comes out of the official Chinese daily newspaper. Get this, Sandra. Medical tests performed on babies in China, female infants who've been fed baby formula, who have been growing full-on breasts, found levels of estrogens circulating in their bloodstreams that are as high as those found in most adult women. We're talking about babies between 4 and 15 months old.
No, I've been reading articles about, you know, the sort of onset of puberty, like in the U.S. too, among, you know, 8, 9, you know.
Right, precocious puberty. Well, now it's down to babies between the ages of 4 and 15 months in China. And the company that manufactures the baby formula is called Sinutra, and they say it's not their fault. They don't say that the hormones aren't in there. They say it's not their fault. Big difference in my world. And so John Robbins asks, what is the source of the hormones? And the Chinese Dairy Association, yes, the Chinese have a dairy association in a communist country.
Man.
You know, come on, can we please quit calling them the communist Chinese? Just please. The Chinese Dairy Association says the hormones could have entered the food chain when the farmers reared the cows. And this is a quote. Since a regulation forbidding the use of hormones to cultivate livestock has yet to be drawn up in China, or, you know, substitute United States, it would be lying to say nobody uses it. So what they're doing in China is they're jacking up the cattle with lactation hormones that are essentially estrogen based, and we're gonna have to start making Wonder Bras for 15-month-olds.
You know what? That's listen. I'm still trying to recover from, you know, the pus in the milk.
That's see, that didn't do me any good either.
No, that brought some, you know, water, you know, vomit in my mouth. Practically, it was horrible when you were talking. I'm like, I know.
You know, I got a note from Marty saying, and that's why I quit drinking milk. It started tasting funny.
Yeah, well, I don't drink milk at all. But it wasn't, not because of that, but just in general, I just sort of backed away from it. But I haven't, you know, the twins, my little nieces, yeah, they're going to have to back way away from it.
Yeah, and you know, I just want the American Dairy Association to put out an ad that says, got pus?
Oh, God, that is so gross. I'm also grossed out by we don't know, according to the what is the Food Administration called?
The FDA?
No, for the agriculture.
Oh, the USDA?
Yeah, they can't say for sure if we're not all eating cloned meat, too. That was also in the news, you know, because there's a big controversy and scandal in England right now.
Oh, Soylent Green is people, Sandra.
Well, so we now are like eating God knows. Well, it's just hideous, though. You know, the clone food is made from like dead meat, dead animals. Now, I mean, it's really quite out of control. And I'm scared about what you were talking about with the weed. That
pigweed.
Pigweed. Wow. And of course, you know me, because I'm so shallow, I flashed to one of my favorite movies, was like The Omen 4, whatever one, when they're taking over all the agriculture. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I don't know which one it is, but part of the whole makeup was like, oh, they're developing, you know, ways of managing all the food in the world. And I'm like, well, I guess we're there, right?
And it's also insane, Sandra, because, again, the last post before the why BP ads were running on Think Progress, and I had a kind of a problem with this one. They posted one, Congress should help Pakistanis help themselves by lowering or eliminating the tariff on Pakistani textiles. It gives the story, we import literally billions and billions of dollars in Pakistani textiles, and there's a 17% tariff on them. And so we're going to help out poor Pakistanis by, and this is a liberal site making this argument.
Right.
By dropping the tariffs on textiles from Pakistan. Isn't that a little clueless?
Yeah, no, it's just incredible. But, you know, I was just thinking while you were talking about that website, I'm thinking, damn, just thinking, you could have had like three different commercials, and what would you say? Oh, will we be back to caller Sandra in a second or three?
Yes.
I mean, you know, obviously not, you know what I'm saying? And so I really appreciate what you're saying about trying to manage the horn in this format, because, you know, I certainly wouldn't be waiting an hour or hour and a half to have some 2-second conversation like them freaks do for,
Megadiddos from Busted Knuckle Rush, I just love you and want to have your babies. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me.
Right. And so, I mean, I, you know, and I sit here sort of frustrated thinking, well, you know, what is to be done to sort of improve upon this model where you're not hat and handing it?
I know.
Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off about it, but it just sort of popped in my mind, and I'm just like, yikes.
Well, it's just a matter of helping. You know, I think, Sandra, it's a curse having to do the pitches like this. You know, I would give anything, you know, for $50,000 from the Open Society Institute. I may be the last human being me and Matt Osborne are the last human beings in America who would gladly hold our hands out and run to the bank with the George Soros check.
Yeah, who
I got a George Soros check, you know.
Bring it on. I can't imagine that would be an issue for you at this stage in the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you know, until that happens, you know, it's just a matter of trying to get that. But again, I, you know, knowing what the listener numbers are to the horn, and bless your heart for kicking in, knowing what the listener numbers are for the horn, if every listener that hears this program sent $10, I could shut up for 4 months.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, you know, I mean, I'll kick in my little $20, big whoop, but...
No, big whoop. Trust me.
500 people did, you know, 500, 300, you know, it's that sort of thing. I mean, that's the only way this system can work is if you get high numbers and low amounts, that could be fine. And that's sustainable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It is sustainable. If you got... 700 people doing $5 or $10. Yeah, it would. But it's a matter of how in the world do you lock in that type of system? You know?
Well, let's go further. And I am not in any way minimizing anybody's contribution. But if we're going to talk about the numbers, we got to talk about the numbers. That number that I gave, $1,135, came from 35 people.
Right.
Five of those people sent $100 each.
Right, okay. Yeah, sure, of course.
So that's $635 divided by 30 people. And what that, you know, but that shows what can happen with lots of people doing a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's so much, but I understand the people who can't, Sandra. Jesus Christ, I do.
Oh, yeah, no, but see... On the other hand, though, when you sort of, you know, lament having to do that, there is a momentum involved with doing that. I'm sorry, you know, you have to kind of say it to get people off their ass. There's that element, too. I'm not saying that people aren't broke, because I know I am, but there is also sort of like, oh, shit, yeah, let me go ahead and do that. So that's why you have to keep bringing it up. I'm sorry, I don't really see any other options until that Soros check comes through.
And the thing is, it's with the Soros people, you don't find them, they find you.
Yeah, oh no, listen, obviously.
I mean, I can send them a letter with a self-addressed stamped envelope for the check to come back in, but they don't care.
Yeah.
They find you. So, you know, this guy at the World who's trying to create this dummied up controversy about Jim Wallace. You know, I'm getting cranky, Sandra. I want to go smack him till the spit flies.
No, it's incredible, especially someone like, I mean, because you know, I've read that Sojourner, you know, a few times. I enjoy that publication. I don't care where that money comes from.
No, because they're saying the right stuff. They're actually talking about a kind of Christianity that I don't want to give chainsaws to and send into the steel cage death match.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, speaking of that magazine, they did this amazing interview with, what is her name? Warner? the woman they want to appoint.
Elizabeth Warren, yeah.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren. It was a really interesting interview. So, please. However the infrastructure gets funded and sustained doesn't matter to me at this point, especially if you look at how the right will throw money at something for a decade and not make any and still keep it going.
Yeah, and then Bill Clinton drops by Newsmax.
Oh, you're killing me. Anyway, listen, I got to go.
All right. Have a wonderful weekend, Sandra. Good talking to you.
All right, bye.
Thanks, bye. And we will continue onward, I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack, what's happening?
Not much. You know, it's interesting. You've made mention of the fact, and Bob Perry has been beating the drum about this since the 90s, that the left, or liberal, or however you want to phrase it, needed to build its own information infrastructure, because that's what the right wing did. They bought the newspapers. You had the Mooney newspapers. You had Rupert Murdoch buying up U.S. citizenship and then buying up TV stations and networks. You know, you had people like Rush Limbaugh making $40 billion a year, for Jesus Christ's sake.
And again, I'm no accountant. I don't play one on the radio, but you... Somebody, one of these days, I want a forensic accountant to examine the amount of money that Rush Limbaugh makes and explain to me, you know, just do a breakdown. If Rush Limbaugh makes $40 million a year and he's on 3,500 stations, then what does the average ad price have to be to support a $40 million salary? And once you realize that that is physically impossible, that there is not enough broadcast time in a three-hour slot to make that up and to pay the salaries of all the executives of the Premier Radio Network, then can we please understand that the right wing is funding this at a level that you and I can only dream of, Cossack?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, you had the Moonies buy a newspaper in D.C., you know, the Washington Times.
Right.
And
it has never turned a profit.
No. Good God, no. And yet, you know, they managed to pay excellent salaries, I understand. You know. But so what, you know,
but again, they pay an excellent salary in return for what?
For all the propaganda they want.
Yeah, your soul, your integrity, yeah. Your morals. But then again, I don't know. Maybe people don't. Maybe that's the real class of people who don't have them. Maybe they've got the inside skinny, Cossack, and all this talk about morals and integrity and ethics and souls and not selling them and who and how much. And you know what? Maybe I'm sitting here the ultimate hypocrite. Maybe I'm a sellout. Maybe I just haven't found my price yet. Maybe nobody's come along yet. Because, frankly, I've never been taken up unto, yea, verily, that high mountain place and offered the world and its dominions, if only I will. Mm-mm. And I don't know, Cossack. Would I say, get thee behind me, Satan? I don't know.
I don't either. That's the thing. I mean, I hate to say it. Everybody has their price. It is not, frequently, it is not even money. But everyone has their price. There is something that they that can be used that will turn anyone.
Well, yeah, you know, there's an old joke. There's an old joke out there. This person is in a bar and looks at someone who is attractive, and says, "Would you have sex with me for $1 million?" And the person says, thinks a minute, says, well, I guess. And the other person then says, well, would you have sex with me for $20? And the person, indignant, says, I am not a prostitute. And the first person says, yeah, you are. Now we're just haggling over price.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's the question for anybody, I suppose.
I mean, because if you think about it, I've noticed something that's just driving me up a wall. But even so-called liberal sites, if you look at the ads, most of them at places like, for crying out loud, Hullabaloo, you know, Digby's place, Fire Dog Lake. Look at the ads.
And the thing is, I mean, I've always been given to understand that internet ads don't pay worth a damn. And but I don't know. Maybe that's something that completely blew past me. You know, and you know, some organizations are trying to get it right. I think Digby is a fellow of one of the liberal think tanks, so that provides some level of income. But there's a story that came out yesterday, Cossack, that kind of grabbed me, talking about the 10 most influential think tanks in the country and who makes what. The Brookings Institution, led since 2002 by former Deputy Secretary of State Strobe Talbot, his salary is $425,000 a year. The Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, led since 1997 by Jessica Tuckman Matthews, former head of the World Resources Institute Environmental Think Tank, $542,155 a year. Richard Haass, who was head of policy planning under Secretary of State Colin Powell, directs the Council on Foreign Relations, $664,000 a year. The RAND Corporation, so delightfully parodied in Dr. Strangelove as the Bland Corporation, the RAND Corporation, led by James Thompson, former nuclear physicist and Pentagon official, $554,727 a year. Then there's the Heritage Foundation. Jesus Christ. The rich really are different from you and me, Cossack. The Heritage Foundation, those fiscal conservatives, has been led since 1977 by Ed Fulner, F-U-E-L-N-E-R. He makes $947,999 a year. Then there's John Hamry, who runs the Center for Strategic and International Studies. John Hamry was Deputy Secretary of State under President Clinton. He's hauling down a whopping $418,544. You know, he can only dream about Ed Fulner. The Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Remember Lee Whitewash Hamilton?
Oh, yeah.
Lee Whitewash Hamilton leads that organization, vice chair of the 9/11 Commission, who allowed George Bush to come in and speak to the commission, but not under oath, and only if he was sitting on Dick Cheney's lap. He makes $371,856. And it goes...
In addition to his congressional retirement.
Sure. You know, nice work if you can get it, I guess. But even for the liberal organizations, so called, I guess we know where the money goes. Which means that if ordinary working stiffs and retired stiffs, and you know, all of us here in the Horn family, that if we want this, yeah, it's going to take $5 a person once a month. You know, 1,000 people doing $5 a month, or 1,000 people doing ten. Because the audience we have here is pretty damn large.
Yeah.
And 35 people are doing the work. Not that I'm complaining.
No,
I wouldn't say this to you except for the fact that, you know, you've generously contributed to the Horn from time to time. And you know what's going on here.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Doing the best I can. Trust me.
Believe me, I understand. I do completely. And this is not a Bob Bitch session. It's really not.
No, I trust me, I understand. It's the thing is the it's hard sometimes to get across to the audience that yes, you're getting this for free, but it ain't free in what it costs to make it go.
Right, and the fact of the matter is those 35 people are it ain't free. Those 35 people are paying for the people who don't. And for the people who can't, it is completely understandable. But there's a difference between can't and won't and just don't remember to.
Exactly.
And again, I can only say that I'm left with that thing that sort of dawned on me last night, that relying on these elected leaders is a fool's errand, Cossack. What we want, we are going to have to make. What we want, we are going to have to demand ourselves. And what we want, we are going to have to create for ourselves. And that's what's going on here. That's what goes on month after month after month after month. So, you know, there you have it. I got a couple more blinkies, though. Good to hear from you, brother, and have a good weekend.
You too.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, Cossack.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from the red state haven of North Florida. That's the Cossack. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Matt. What's up?
Well, just jumping on real quick. I have not been, I just got to the computer about an hour and a half ago, and for most of that time, Comcast was not cooperating. So
Comcast is being a pain in the ass for a lot of people right now.
Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with their service, but yeah, it's really annoying. Anyway, I wanted to let your listeners know that I just posted up We All Live in a U2 Submarine at Head On Radio.
Oh, God, that's beautiful.
It's just up on the front page, and that also has a link to my very first post at crooksandliars.com.
Awesome, awesome. I'm looking at the Video Cafe posting over at Crooks and Liars. You know what? This thing needs some plays and needs some love.
It does. It does. So, you know, your listeners need to get over there and just watch that little video. Hey, listen, I just caught this before I called you, and I'm going to let you get to that last blinking light, but you've got to hear this. You know who Victor Bout is?
Offhand doesn't ring a bell.
He is a arms smuggler from Russia. They made a movie about him, or loosely based on his life, called Lord of War, starred Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until I was reading this article, but he has a wife, and he's been arrested. He's in trouble. He's been arrested in Southeast Asia, and it looks like he's going to be extradited to the United States. But his wife is quoted here, and her first name is Alla, A-L-L-A, last name B-O-U-T, but her name is All About.
Holy crap.
Man, I'm going to let you get that last blinking light. You have a good weekend, man.
Oh, you too, Matt. And I haven't been able to watch it yet. I can't wait till, I can wait. But I mean, when the show's over, the first thing I'm going to do is watch We All Live in a U2 Submarine.
That's right. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, later. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne of Osborne, Inc. Go on over to Crooks and Liars to the Video Cafe. You can link there and comment there. Let them see that this is stuff that's worth noting and worth taking into account and worth posting, because again, it's look, if we ever get to the point where those 1,000 people give $10 a month, I get to stop all this. Not all this like the radio show, but all this shameless hat passing. Okay, and by the way, before heading back to the last blinking light. A note from Kate out on the far desert of Arizona. She says, open note for Maura. Bless your heart for picking up the task of increasing contributions. I'm not sure counting and comparisons will work. We've tried that before. The same 30, oh, it's up to 35, have been supporting us all along. Sometimes in a dire emergency, a few of the 30 will triple their contributions, but very rarely has the number gone up over 40. I've often noted that if listeners would make a little list of all the money they spend in a week, all the drive-thrus at the grocery counter, at the gas station quick stop, that extra six-pack, that extra pack of smokes, the chips, the soft drinks, or bottled water, those extra trips to the store in the car, all those little bits of change, add them all up, send that much to the horn the following week, oh dear, we'd have operating money coming out of our ears. Folks don't usually consider that even a $5 contribution adds up. So keep up your prodding of the family, please, Maura. Me, I gave up making these monthly calls for money, trying to explain to folks that someday the mic won't go hot. And then Kate notes, I'm giving up my dysfunctional Verizon broadband, so my calls are likely to be few and far between, perhaps from truck stop payphones. But the money I save is likely to increase my contribution, maybe pitching in for someone whose Social Security check isn't as large as mine. These are brutal realizations. And thank you to those of you who have kicked in. It has gone up. You've added $115 to the kitty during the course of this program, and it is sincerely, and I do mean sincerely, appreciated. 10 minutes before the hour, and I guess we'll wrap things up. Where and how? Where and how, I guess, is the big question. This is how. You know, I've talked from time to time about the fact that we have, and this is, you know, I'm not griping. I'm just pointing out problems that our side has. You know, the places where we drop the damn ball, you know, we're in open field and we're running and we're 30 yards from the goal line and the ball just falls out of our arms. Not like we got hit or anything. This is one of those. I've told you from time to time that, among others, my dear friend Bo Webb is busting his hump to create this mass mobilization in Washington, D.C., scheduled for the 25th of September, the 25th through the 27th. We're calling it Appalachia Rising. Because mountaintop removal and strip mining is killing people. Mountaintop removal and strip mining had a hand in the death of Elbert Gervonta Woods, whom we discussed at the end of the program last night, and who I think he probably ought to stay in my memory. And his parents in my sympathies. But Bo and a group of others have pulled together Appalachia Rising, and they're busting their humps to create a real mass mobilization in Washington, D.C. in September. We want thousands of people there. Thousands. God, if we could fill. But it's not just about Appalachia, or at least not the way I look at it. If you've heard Jeff Biggers on this program talking about the origins of America that started in Appalachia, his seminal work, The United States of Appalachia, you know that the salvation of the revolution happened in the Appalachian Mountains. You know that there was a call to arms to save the revolution that culminated in the Battle of Kings Mountain, that ultimately led to the surrender of Cornwallis at Yorktown. That was an Appalachian rising, too. And it's my hope that this Appalachian rising will result in other people standing up in other places, whether it be our fellow Americans in Alaska, struggling against predatory coal companies there that want to destroy spawning grounds for native multi-thousand-year-old spawning streams for salmon that literally feed entire communities, or whether it be First Peoples on the Black Mesa of Arizona who are sick literally unto death of being preyed upon by Peabody Energy. Or whether it be Jeff Biggers' own family and friends and colleagues and neighbors in southern Illinois struggling to save that formerly exquisite region from ultimate ruination by strip mining. The people whose water is being destroyed in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming. The expansion of coal extraction in Montana. All via strip mining. I'm hoping that Appalachia Rising will be a clarion call for others to join with us, stand shoulder to shoulder and hand in hand, and show the federal government we mean business. And so I almost ran around the room naked the other day, screaming and tearing at my hair, when I read the following in The Hill. Headline, Gore calls for major protests on climate change in action. Former Vice President Gore is calling for major rallies to protest congressional inaction on climate change. In a post on his personal blog headlined, The Movement We Need, Gore linked to and quoted from an Australian wire service report that tens of thousands of protesters have taken to the streets across Australia to urge the major political parties to take action on climate change. Because, you see, the coal industry is preying upon Australian communities as well. Gore wrote, across the world, when politicians fail to take action to solve the climate crisis, people are taking action. It is my hope we see activism like this here in the United States. I got a little problem. The people associated with Appalachia Rising have begged for an endorsement from Al Gore. Or for Al Gore's people to even acknowledge Appalachia Rising. There are people within the Appalachia Rising that may very well wind up getting arrested. Many will not. Some may. Hear the crickets? Yeah, me too. And that is one of the fundamental problems we face. We are called upon to do things, and the people calling upon us to do things won't even stand with us, won't even let us go forward, but stand behind us. The big greens in this country, you know what the big greens are. You know who they are, too. I'm not going to name names. There's no point. You know who they are. You can tick them off on your thumb as well as I can. They have raised millions of dollars on our hillbilly backs. Hear the crickets? Yeah, me too. We were told in Las Vegas that it is simply unrealistic to expect that the environment or the climate will ever create a movement for social change akin to the civil rights movement. Sitting at that panel were some of the biggest leaders of civil rights today. Majora Carter, Michael Broun, the president of the Sierra Club, David Roberts, I think, from Grist magazine, a couple of other people. And they all sat there and nodded their heads. Yep, no civil rights movement. God damn. The environment is the ultimate civil rights movement. Because if you don't have somewhere to live without being poisoned, your civil rights just don't seem to count for a hell of a lot. So that's the program. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And I hope you'll be here Monday night. I will be for more and Monday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. First of all, you who contribute to keep things going. There are 39 of you now. We started with 35. Thank you. Those who contribute your ideas, your precious and finite time. Thank you to our chat room moderator, Lottie, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com. Don't forget to go over to Crooks and Liars Video Cafe and watch the video and give it some love and comments and stuff and talk about how cool the horn is. John Fox is our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, master of many trades, and I appreciate all of his help. One of these days, we're going to get all Fox Up back on the air, one way or the other. Ben Birch, bless his heart, is on vacation right now, much needed and much deserved. And WhiteRoseSociety.org is the whole reason that the horn reaches you wherever you are, all around this little globe of ours. Maybe in space. For those of you on Beta Reticuli, God, they'll send the battle cruisers now. The hardest working, bravest people I know are the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. An originator and endorser of Appalachia Rising. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Had to put the phone ringer away. Yeesh. It's a minute and a half past the hour. It's Friday on the front porch, everybody. We have had an absolute run of magnificent Friday afternoons. It seems like the pretty ones come when I those pretty Fridays come along on the days when, well, I got to figure out a way to build an outdoor studio. That's all there is to it. Sit there basking in the sun. While there's still sun to bask in, because, you know, here in the hills and hollers of what's left of almost, well, wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia, we cherish these late August afternoons. It won't be long before we will begin to notice most affirmatively the fading of the light as we slide toward autumn and then downhill to the dead and still of winter. That's how it goes. But this is a beautiful one. And so it's an awesome, wonderful opportunity to mosey on up to the front porch here, have a seat, kick your feet up on the rail, uncap a bottle of something ice cold from out of that zinc galvanized wash tub over there. Non-expert players of the washboard are asked to please refrain from any attempt to provide a percussion or rhythm section accompaniment for the conversation. Now, there's a jug of sweet iced tea over there, too. Got some lemon sliced up. Help yourself.
because it being is a beautiful evening, we've got tons to cuss and discuss about. And, you know, with it being Friday on the front porch, we can talk about most anything. You know how that goes. And I try to find some stuff that maybe hasn't made it into the consciousness over the course of the week to discuss as we go along. And I've got a bunch of that this evening. Food stuff, religion stuff, kind of like a mini prayer meeting. We'll call it revival. And that's the only time. That's the only time Baptists ever go to church on a Friday is if that Friday is either Christmas or they're having a revival. Let's see. Just a heartrending tale. We'll go to audio for this. A heartrending tale of what for-profit healthcare means in America. That's a possibility. Don't look now, but the oil plume ain't gone. There's that. Over-the-air terrestrial buggy whip radio is having a hissy. I don't know if you caught any of this, but this is funny. They're so pathetic. They really are. They're like buggy whip manufacturers. The carrying on about Henry Ford and his newfangled horseless carriage. And then there's Israel. There's always Israel. And that bloodlust that makes them want to bomb the snot out of Iranian people, you know, for being Iranian people. Iranian people whose government wants to have nuclear power so as not to waste all of their mineral resources there at home and put it on the open market instead. But, you know, Israel needs to bomb them. And we're told that, you know, the White House has talked them out of bombing Iran for maybe another year or so. But, well, we'll get to that. There's a bunch of other stuff. And look at that. One of those ahead-of-the-curve moments that you only get to participate in if you're on the horn. An interesting post over at Think Progress today. I think this is something that came up during the conversation that I had a week or so ago with Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash and Maya Shenware from the executive director of truthout.org. And there's a whale of a story I found over at Truthout. It'll make its way into the conversation tonight. That's part of the Friday revival part of the program. But during that conversation, you may recall that I sort of spilled the beans and said I was getting really sick of seeing BP ads at Think Progress. And that I, of course, click the ads so that it will cost BP more money because BP's stupid PR and advertising campaigns have no effect on me. Because I know that it's BP. They're filthy global corporatists, and, of course, being such, they're going to lie. Going back to that little article I mentioned earlier, the plume ain't gone. Yeah, still there. Might be there for weeks, might be there for months, might be there for years. BP, by the way, is asking people to sign waivers of liability if they want to participate in the $20 billion the escrow fund that they haven't funded. But the Think Progress story is rather interesting because it raises a couple of questions along as well as answering them. A little profile and courage perhaps this evening. How not to let right-wing freaks run you out of your job. That would be Kevin Jennings. And that filthy pig Beck and the rest of the filthy pigs of the right-wing media have attacked Kevin Jennings relentlessly. For what? Oh, for being gay. But Kevin Jennings won't back down. Kind of makes you proud. And then this little moment, got a headline here. Gore calls for major protests on climate change in action. I think we got to spend some time with that, hopefully. Let's see, we've got a raving misogynist at the United States Chamber of Commerce, no surprise. And congratulations to Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. Congratulations to Matt. He has posted his first ever post with, woohoo, 60 comments already at Crooks and Liars, Ground Zero and the Zero Sum Mindset. A nice analysis of the way that wingnuts look at rights-related issues.